aboard, you people. Starship Rokansha. Taking out for another day of broadcast insolence. Kim Gordon on the news. Mr. Kevin Powell on the sports. And Lauren Lapka on traffic, sometimes weather, random thoughts, and corrections. She is basically our correction department.
She keeps us in line for sure.
No question. And fact check. It's a constant fact check here.
Which that kind of be the same, you know, they're in the same ballpark.
See, exactly. She corrected me. She had to clarify. Yes, about whether or not I was actually said fact check. So that's what goes on there, just in case you're wondering. On the program today, very important to be noted, coming up, your chance to rip us off for Roger Hodgson tickets. I know there are people out there who go, who? Supertramp. You know, you never really thought about who was, if you're like, you just love Supertramp's music, but you didn't know who it was two guys, essentially, that were Supertramp. And then they would hire the rest of the band. And they are one of the best live bands and one of the best, one of the most interesting and ethereal acts of the 1970s into the 1980s. We are going to send you to the Silver Creek Event Center, Four Winds, New Buffalo, on Saturday, February 22nd. And that's at 9 p.m. Eastern. You got to remember, when you're going to Michigan, you always have to convert. Yeah. Even though it's like, you know, it's a 45-minute drive, but you're leaving
really
a time zone.
Yeah.
Just get there early. Plenty of things to do there these days. So many breweries.
Right. 8 o'clock Chicago time, 9 o'clock Eastern. They respond to that because, they stay up later in Michigan. I don't know. Whatever it is that they do. Tickets available now. Ticketmaster, Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape. That's a pretty good. They're getting great acts in that particular joint. There.
Didn't they just have Casey and the Sunshine?
They did. That was New Year's Eve,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Lucky ducks.
Yeah. We would try to do that, but then, as always, alcohol got in the way. That's what happens. All right. And Ben Bradley coming up on the program just in a few minutes here to talk about, this is interesting, of course, from Channel 9, to talk about a new area at Navy Pier. That has just been announced.
Looks really cool.
They're trying to make Navy Pier cool again.
Navy Pier is cool. What are you talking about? They just got the largest rooftop bar in the country.
That's part of making it cool. That was like step one. It was never cool. It was never went back. It was
that's because you grew up right by it.
Yeah, but there was a problem when it was an actual real pier when I was growing up here in the 70s and 80s. And then they decided in the late 70s, they made it into a concert venue and a festival venue. But it was not really prepared for that because it was still partially a working pier. And you know what happens on working piers?
Boats come in?
Well, but not cruise ships, like freighters come in and they pull up to the pier. And now you look at Navy Pier now and you need to come downtown. You maybe want to take the kids, and especially if the kids are younger, they had that museum where they can climb a wall or everything smells like puke or whatever it is that they go, one of those things. But they had in the 70s, it was like ships like from all over the world would pull in to the pier.
Really?
and disgorge whatever it was. Like there would be a ship from Greece and it was nothing but Greek olives, right? Coming off the ship. Or there were, whatever it happened to be. This was part of the shipping lane for downtown stuff. Now, I don't know if you're familiar, because, I grew up on the docks myself. They attract wildlife. So there was always a lot of vermin, and it was always kind of dirty, and it was always kind of creepy.
Isn't that still kind of a problem?
Well, there's coyotes there. We're going to talk about that later on in the program. There's actually a coyote problem out there, but that's a separate issue. And I mean, if your kids are big enough, they won't mess with the coyotes won't mess with them. They changed Navy Pier in the 1980s to be, after they did a couple like Chicago Fest, which is the progenitor to what eventually became Taste of Chicago. It was a big concert and food festival. But, it's tough because you were fighting rats the size of pit bulls for the food that was available.
Kind of like Nutcracker size, when you watch the movie, the rats are ginormous.
Yes, they are. They were very, very big. Now they've cleaned everything up.
And when did it go full family?
It went full family in the 90s into the 2000s.
Because I always went there as a kid.
Right.
A lot of
suburbanites. So now it's beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. It's got great restaurants.
little theater there.
They got a great IMAX theater. They got the Ferris wheel. They got all this other stuff. But it has, the further you get in, the dorkier it becomes. And so they've been trying to figure out how to keep the dorkiness from being the entire pier. So they make it kind of hipster and fun and, a big rooftop bar out east, almost a mile into the lake. And now they're adding something new. So Ben will explain exactly what that is coming up. Ben Bradley from WGN TV News, of course.
Because the new thing will get the Beccas of the world.
Yes, but the Beccas have to be drunk. They have to be sober enough to get 3/4 of a mile down the pier. And the question is, how do you get down the pier?
Well, they're about to open a hotel there, so now they can just spend the night.
That's true. Ooh. That's true. It's a big hotel they're opening there, too.
Really big, yeah.
We can see it from our vantage point here, but obviously the listeners can't. So let me just explain this. You have no idea how big Navy Pier is until you're told walk from one end of it to another. It's a full mile. It is an actual mile from the beginning of the pier to the end of the pier. Statutory, by the way. So, and they got a bunch of, there's boats out there and everything now. But I'm just saying, we're trying to make it. We had to make it usable, which we did in the, 30 years ago. Then in the last 20 years, they tried to, make it functional as an entertainment destination, and it mostly is. But, when you go to the food court and it's McDonald's, you go, okay, I know this is the home of McDonald's and everything, but still. All right, we'll get to Ben Bradley coming up right after we talk to Lauren Lapka about the traffic and the weather. He's Ben Bradley from the WGN-TV newsroom right now, and he is, of course, the anchor of the 4 o'clock news.
Does that mean I wait the whole broadcast down?
You are the, yes, that's exactly
I always
exactly
wonder,
what anchor means.
I know the origin of the term anchor.
Oh, this is going to be interesting. Hope this is very interesting. Go ahead, yes.
But I think depending on your city and your history, it really could mean a couple of different things, right? You could be the anchor of the team, right? The guy who brings it all together. Or you could be the anchor that's used to, weight down the dead body in the Hudson River.
Wow, how dark.
I'm just saying, you said the term, he's the anchor, there was some sort
In your next job review, Ben, I wouldn't bring this up.
Hey, which one am I? You say here you want me to be the 4 p.m. anchor. Do you mean the one that weights it down?
God. All right, can we talk about something important? We were just talking about Navy Pier.
Yes, sir.
So Navy Pier, they're going to build a brand new facility at Navy Pier. They got this new hotel going up. We all knew about that. Mm-hmm. They just announced plans, and you're going to have this on the WGN-TV news coming up.
Yep.
Announced plans for a marina, a brand new marina, where this is like a pull up during the day. You're not going to be able to anchor there for for the year, for the season.
Right.
This is just you pull up for the day, and it would be sort of the answer to what we affectionately refer to here as the playpen, which is the bay of Lake Michigan that is essentially just north of Navy Pier and east of Navy Pier, right off Lakeshore Drive.
Right
where
between
pull
the
in.
Pier and the Jardine Water Treatment Plant.
Yeah, so that's where the new marina is going to be. And the whole idea is because that on any given Saturday or Sunday in the summer, if it's boating weather, and sometimes even if it's not boating weather, you can get hundreds of boats that will commune right off Lakeshore Drive just north of Navy Pier. In that bay there.
Right there at Oak Street.
Right, between Lakeshore Drive and the water filtration plant. So you get, it's crazy
But I don't
number
think this is going to take away from that. I think those people who go to the playpen do so because of the, stunning views of the Hancock building and, that little sweet spot, that elbow there of Lakeshore Drive. I think that's going to stay as is.
Well, I think they also believe, the people who go there, because it's a lot of guys, a lot of young guys, shirtless, great abs, and they've got their hats to the back, and then young women who
salmon
when they
shorts, you forgot the salmon shorts,
and salmon color shorts, and then
a lot of oil on their chest,
and then girls who arrive. For every guy, there are at least, it's a 3 or 4 to 1 ratio for every guy to numbers of women,
yes,
who show up in that, and when they arrive at the boat at the dock, wherever it happens to be when they're leaving, whatever marina or wherever they pick up the boat. They scream when they arrive there.
I was going to say, the average conversation, we went by there this summer just to feel old, and the average conversation we could overhear consisted of, Hey.
We're out of White Claw again. Damn it, Brad. You never pack enough White Claw.
No, our boat was out of White Claw. I think they were drinking harder stuff.
Throughout the summer, we had a recurring character on the program, Becca, who was always the girl who would fall off the boat after a number of White Claws, and they were like, I don't know, where's Becca? What happened to Becca?
She left with Brad, but I haven't seen her since.
Oh, my God. And her butt is so big.
No, not anymore. So
you know, we actually, let me tell you a story I probably shouldn't tell.
Fire away.
Yep.
So we were out on a boat. This is a couple of years ago. A friend had invited us, and we invited Lourdes to come out. And then it was right after Joe Donlan started at GN. And so Lourdes and I and my wife and, you know, a bunch of other people are out on this boat. And it was one of those just perfect Chicago summer nights. And we start talking about it, and somebody said, oh, how's the new guy? How's Donlin? And I said, well, he's doing great, but I feel bad. I have this sense his family hasn't moved here yet. And I just picture him wandering around the city with no friends, knowing, you know, no one to hang out with. So we called him up. And we were like, Joe, we're coming in the lock right now. Go stand down on the river walk. We're going to pick you up. And so we scooped him up, and we took him over to the playpen. And that was, you know, his eyes are bright. He's, what's going on here? And we did briefly lose Lourdes to some guy in a jet ski who pulled up. And Lourdes is like, I've always wanted to go on a jet ski. And we're like, this is a great idea. You absolutely should.
Follow that jet ski. Is your news director listening to this right now?
We called it team building, and I think we billed the whole thing back to the newsroom.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
By the way, fast forward, Lourdes getting married today.
To the guy on the jet ski.
Different guy.
He's got a great jet ski. Good guy, too.
Now, wait, no, this wouldn't have been about a year ago. No, that wouldn't have been right. I'm just trying to figure out the baby. I just want to make sure I know where that's going.
Unrelated.
Yeah, jet ski baby. All right.
Unrelated. Jet ski baby. Okay. Classic playpen baby.
Yeah. Never let your girlfriend get on somebody else's motorcycle or jet ski.
Very true.
These are tried and true rules.
Very true. Yeah. Very true. So, and, you know, and this guy's like, oh my gosh, this is so fun. And it was, he turned out to be a nice guy, and we all had fun. But it was a great summer night out on the boat there. And this whole marina at Navy Pier looks like it's going to be fun because, you know, for a long time, Navy Pier was just the place where the tourists went, and I think they've done a good job of, as you said, bringing a hotel, bringing some other restaurants out there. And if you're going to put a transient marina, which is basically a place, you know, you don't have to own a slip there all summer long.
Do you have to book the slip though?
What?
Do you have to book the slip?
I assume you have to book ahead. Yeah. But I mean, Ro, I know your yacht is a little bigger than this, but the boats up to 130 feet are going to be accommodated there.
Wow.
Down in the dinghy. Yep. But think about it. What a fun way to bring more people out to Navy Pier. You know, you pull up there, you go in, you have a lunch or whatever. They're going to have grills, bike racks, all that sort of stuff. This new Navy
Pier. That's all we need is more bike racks, encouraging more of that activity.
I'm disappointed they don't put one of those new electric scooter stations that didn't last very long. Because can you imagine how many tourists would just go right off the end of the pier?
5 times more scooters in the lake then.
To go right along with the shopping carts and other items.
Hey,
always
Becca,
about that when you see the
people this
training.
Will be fun. Throw it in there.
When you see the people training for the
triathlon.
Thank you. Yes, never done one.
There we go, Lauren. Another tip in. Yeah.
You know, I was like, gosh, can you imagine what they're just swimming past there?
Ugh.
Because that rubber stuff ends up in between your toes, and you know you pick it up and go, oh no,
what's dragging me? Why is my time so bad in this portion of the triathlon? I've got a shopping cart connected to my foot.
Yeah, it's a condom drag chute. Something. It's just bad. It's just the summer behavior in this town.
People go nuts.
Do you realize?
It's because we know we've got like 30 minutes to enjoy the beautiful weather.
Yeah.
So everybody is all in.
I always use this statistic with people who are from out of town. So we should now, all of us who are from town, should always share this statistic with people. And they're like, oh, I had no idea that Lake Michigan was so big. Right? You hear that a lot from people who come here. They're like, I just thought it was like a lake. They don't get it. It's an inland ocean.
Right.
Right? So I always like to point out that we actually have the largest municipal marina system in the United States. Bigger than Miami, bigger than Los Angeles, bigger than San Francisco or anywhere else.
Take that, Don Johnson.
Yeah. How about that? How about that?
That is a fun fact. I did not know that.
That is true.
Hmm.
They have private marinas and stuff like that, but we have the largest municipal marina system in the United States.
How many boats will be able to dock at the new marina? Does it say?
I'm looking through my documents.
What sort of crowd they're trying to get. I'm sure that's the idea, is to pick a few off the playbook.
7,000 linear feet of mooring space. I guess it depends whether they're all yachts that show up or dinghies.
Well, not yachts are not going to show up to that.
Well, what do you call a 100 and...
Yeah, but they're not going to... That would be very rare. That would be a party boat of, you know, there would be somebody... And that would be the Duchess Wah boat showing up.
Unless they were coming from, like, New Buffalo and then just wanted to hang out for the day.
Well, 130 feet is still pretty... you know, that was funny. Lauren just gave me a look. I just wanted to share this. Lauren gave me a look like, I don't know if that's so big.
I'm much bigger in the playpen in my day.
Yeah, I don't know. You can tell that Lauren takes her life very seriously now, but you could tell there was a moment in her life where...
Definitely.
Yeah, she was definitely out there.
She was a Becca in the playpen.
I grew up on boats. What can I say?
Yeah, there we go. I'm very nautical.
So did Becca.
Yes. Well, we're going to get Ro a skipper hat and a pipe.
I already have that.
Can't wait to see him out there.
That's how I dressed for my 6th birthday.
You know what Ron Majors once said about boats? It was one of my favorite Ron lines. He goes, you know what the best day and the worst day about of boat ownership is? The best day is the day before you buy it, and the worst day is every day after, or something to that effect.
Well, it's the two best days are the day you buy it and the day you sell it.
Yes. Yeah.
That's absolutely true. And then, you know, we're obviously friends with a famed Chicago television anchor, now retired Ron Majors, who was a very serious boater for
a while. A yachtsman.
Almost a yachtsman. One would call him almost a yachtsman. I think he believed he was driving an aircraft carrier. But he would call me like at 8 o'clock in the morning, which has been, you know, well known. It's not a good time to call.
No.
And he would go, hey, come out to the dock or come out to the marina. I want to talk to you about something. And it was basically just an excuse to get me out to help him work on the boat.
I've got a great lead on a horse.
Yeah. Could you hold on to this while I got to go down? Wait.
Bring your scrubbing brush.
We have to clean all the spiders off the deck. Basically what he would say to me. All right, what else is coming up? You got about a minute left to tease.
Covering the Louis Vuitton robberies. I'm sure you heard about this on the Mag Mile, and a half hour later in Northbrook. They got away with tens of thousands of dollars in merchandise. Police now working together in the city and suburbs to determine whether or not they're connected.
Same crew?
It could be. I mean, the timing works. Whether or not surveillance images and whatnot show it's the same crew, we're still waiting for confirmation from police. But it certainly would be surprising to see two Louis Vuitton stores robbed in the same night without a connection between the two.
Well, and this is Cook County. So thanks to Kim Fox, the Cook County State's Attorney, we'll never have to worry about them spending a night in jail, even if they do arrest them, because it's you have to rob the place 10 times. Now, that counts as two. So that's before she actually puts you away for a night. Just letting you know.
We'll see you on the news at 4 and on Ron's boat this summer.
Ron now calls from Miami and says the same thing. Hey, I got this. You know what? I'm having an electrical problem on the boat. Could you come down here?
I talked to him yesterday. He sounded very happy and relaxed.
Yes.
May we all be one day.
Yes, exactly. I hope so. All right. Thank you. Ben Bradley's Hugh on the WGN-TV News coming up at 4 o'clock. Right now, the WGN Radio News with Kim Gordon. Brocon Show right here on 720 WGN Chicago. All right. There is a story today, trickily headlined, Don't Kiss the Baby. I don't like to kiss the babies. I like to smell their heads. I don't like to kiss them.
Smell their heads?
Yeah, they're sounding like a newborn baby. It's like there's a whole thing that goes on there.
It's just got a really weird image of you just like up against a baby like...
Thank you, Lauren. Yes, that would be about right. People know.
Yeah, that Rokan, he's an odd one.
The point is that there's a story today about a virus that in adults is not that big of a deal. It presents as a cold, maybe a, you know, sort of a bad cold, but it just as a cold, and people get over it. It's called RSV.
Mm.
But if babies or young kids under the age of two, essentially, contract this, it could be devastating to them. Jen Matzak is joining us. She is with Northwestern Medicine. She is a doctor, pediatric hospitalist at Northwestern Medicine, Central DuPage Hospital. And we just learned, our own Lauren Lapka, who sits here and does the traffic and the weather and is our fact checker for the program, has contracted this as a baby yourself, right?
Yeah, just a few weeks old. I had to go to the hospital, stay in there 2 to 3 days. It did not look good. My mom was terrified. It was pretty bad. IVs everywhere, oxygen. It's scary because really it just presents itself as a cold and as a baby. Obviously, it's hard to tell what's truly wrong.
So explain, doctor, why it is so bad for babies when it's certainly manageable by adults.
Well, I think one of the biggest problems that babies and young kids have are getting over the secretions or handling their secretions the same way an older kid or an adult would. And so these runny nose and these thick secretions can really affect their appetites and lead to dehydration and difficulty breathing that, Lauren, like you did, like would need some supplemental oxygen and just to help support them through this illness.
Now, how do you know if you have RSV versus a different cold, or is it any one of those upper respiratory viruses that you have to worry about if you're the adult and you've got a new baby in your life?
That's a good question. RSV is certainly not the only virus running around right now creating a problem. There are lots of other viruses and lots of great reasons to only do things like kiss the clothes and toes. A parent once gave me that great advice, only kiss the clothes and toes of the little baby so you're not going to pass symptoms on. But, you know, little babies are just so much more susceptible to these viruses because of those symptoms. And it does start out so general and so subtle, and it can and steamroll pretty quickly.
And it's all because the basic problem here, the mechanism for real serious illness is the fact that, as you just pointed out, the secretions get so thick, it creates trouble in breathing, it creates trouble in swallowing, which obviously changes exactly how what babies need most, right, which is to eat and to breathe.
Absolutely.
Breathing first, I guess. I should point that out.
Really quite contagious as well?
It is quite contagious, especially in the first 3 to 7 days of illness, and it can be, it can just catch like fire. It can spread so easily from coughing, sneezing, you know, wiping a secretion on anything like a doorknob or a countertop, and so going into like really crowded areas is a difficult thing to do when you have young children right now. Being worried about that is a real thing.
Yeah. And like flu season, too. Now, is there a certain amount of immunity for newborns? That you always hear that they get an immunity from their mother from birth?
Yeah, that would be helpful, certainly. But we do see a lot of infants who are breastfed and receiving those antibodies from their mothers contract RSV and get affected by it as well.
Is there a test for RSV?
There is a test for RSV. We sometimes perform it and we sometimes don't, because the standard of treatment is usually supportive. So sometimes it doesn't matter if it's a positive RSV test. We certainly support the child or the patient the same way.
But as a parent,
there's no medicine for it, sadly.
Well, so dad, because it's a virus, right? So it's
exactly.
So dad comes home. He's got a cold. Mom's going to go, you've got RSV. You have to move out of the house for, you know, the next. I mean, I just know how this goes. So is there a way to get tested as an adult?
There is a way to get tested, but again, it doesn't affect how we recommend people try and keep their families and their young ones safe by controlling your own secretions, covering your mouth or your nose when you sneeze into your sleeve, washing your hands. Can never do that too much this time of the year. And try and not have any close contact with infants or small children when you do have even the slightest symptoms of a cold.
All right. Doctor, thank you very much. Jen Matzak from Northwestern Medicine. Better knowledge means better health for you and your family. True, turn to Northwestern Medicine at nm.org/healthbeatnews for health tips, research, and so much more. Doctor, appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Let's check in right now with Lauren Lapka, who survived RSV as a child. So she has related experience. Tell us about the traffic and the weather. Rokan Show right here, 720 WGN. All right, the alderman, one of the aldermen from downtown. There's two aldermen who kind of work the downtown lakefront area. And Alderman Brian Hopkins is with us. And there have been a rash of robberies downtown in Streeterville. North Streeterville, as it's known, which is just east of Michigan Avenue. It's that area, like, down near East Lakeshore Drive and then parts inward, Water Tower Place, places like that. And a number of other kind of crimes. We're going to get to the Louis Vuitton crime here in just a moment that happened last night, which is on Michigan Avenue. But before we do that, there have been a community alert about this, and we should, for people who are listening to us in that area, they should know about this. So far, it's been identified as a white van. Number of teens disgorged, or early 20s, men and women disgorged from the van, try to take down a lone walker, whether it's somebody walking a dog or they're just walking alone, and hit them, kick them, get them on the ground, and then steal whatever they can from them and get back in the van and get away. Is that about right?
Yeah. Unique about this is the specific geography that this has been happening, a very small area, not just Streeterville, not even just North Streeterville, but just a couple of square blocks in North Streeterville. So they seem to, for whatever reason, have decided that this particular area is going to be their hunting grounds, and they're going after phones.
And it's east of Water Tower Place, essentially.
Of Water Tower Place, so yeah. Just west of Inner Lakeshore Drive and north of the park on Chicago Avenue.
Right. So Pearson to Walton there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what all the victims have in common is they were either on their phone at the time or carrying their phone in a visible way. So we know these offenders are targeting phones in particular.
So phones are not, they're not looking for money? They haven't been taking money?
Well, in a couple of instances, just sort of as an afterthought, they've grabbed some purses and they've grabbed some jewelry. But I just actually just got off the phone with one of the victims. I was talking to her about an hour ago, and she said they seemed interested in nothing but her phone.
Were they all women? I thought I read that most of them were women victims.
Most were, yeah. Okay. Two males that we know of. The rest were women.
In terms of victims?
In terms of victims,
okay,
yeah.
And how many victims do we have so far?
Well, we've got five incidents that we're connecting with these same group of offenders. Last night's incident, there were three victims that were targeted. One, there was a solo victim.
There was one last night as well?
There was one last night as well, yeah.
Okay.
And that one happened on Chestnut.
And that's been happening for the last three, this is the last three nights, four nights or something like that?
Actually, Christmas Eve was the first, mm-hmm. The first incident that we connected to this specific vehicle, which, as you mentioned, Roe, was a white Jeep that we're looking for and actually have come pretty close to apprehending a couple of times.
I think they know what it is, too. Was it stolen?
Yes, it was reported stolen shortly before Christmas. It was reported stolen in Homer Glen.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So how do you combat it? How do you slow it down? How do you stop this?
Yeah, well, you know, we've deployed undercover resources all over Streeterville right now. Streeterville actually is saturated at the moment. It's probably the safest neighborhood in Chicago right now because we've pretty much got a cop on every corner. We're also deploying the bike patrol officers. They're going to be on their bikes all weekend long as well. We're using the license plate reader technology, and we've got some undercover resources, and we're also working with Northwestern University Police. Interestingly enough, in one of these incidents, the Northwestern University Police were the first on the scene. They beat the Chicago Police by a couple of minutes. So
they're right there.
Very helpful. They're right there, yeah. And you know that's their area.
On the other
too.
Side of
it's
that
their
park.
Campus. Their students, their staff, their faculty are walking the streets of Streeterville
well,
as well.
Well, that neighborhood and I grew up in that neighborhood. That neighborhood is always had a huge amount of personnel from the hospital. You know, the people, whether it was staff or doctors or whatever it happened to be, that were living in those. It's one of the most dense. This is the reason this is an important story. It's one of the most dense neighborhoods in Chicago because you've got buildings that you've got the Hancock Building there. You've got Water Tower Place. You've got all those the smaller buildings. But the smallest building there is 20 something stories. And, you know, with hundreds of apartments, you've got thousands of people living in that really dense little area. And it's the same amount in eight square blocks. It's the same amount that would be in, you know, maybe two neighborhoods in Chicago, numbers of people.
Yeah, basically, it's our version of Manhattan.
Yeah. So, and it's interesting because it is a soft target because people are walking around there. There's always going to be somebody walking around, but they don't walk around. Sometimes on the one block that they've been really targeting, which is only a three block long street just west of Lakeshore Drive, near Lakeshore Drive, is you can get in and out of there very quickly. And generally, there's only like one person walking out at a time. And that's, you can see exactly how this could happen. It's very scary for people downtown. And it's right off of Michigan Avenue, where you had this, again, another one of those smash-and-grab kind of robberies at Louis Vuitton last night, where how many people do we think went into that?
It was a large group. It was seven, eight.
Right.
At a time.
Go in, and they've got bats or whatever they're using to smash the counters and to also get stuff.
Yeah, and there were a couple of members of this group, which was rather organized, stayed outside and to monitor the door. They were about 75 feet from Chicago police officers who were posted there, and they saw them and just had no fear. They were literally not afraid of the uniformed police officers in their orange vests, what we call the VRI unit. Who were present and didn't realize what was happening until, of course, it was too late. And by then, the offenders had the merchandise and they, ran to their vehicle and made their escape.
And then there was a robbery about a half hour later up in Northbrook at another Louis Vuitton. I guess we're investigating whether that's connected.
Yeah, we're in touch with the Northbrook police and they're pursuing a connection there. It seems too much of a coincidence to not be connected.
So Michigan Avenue, and we've been talking about this, has been a problem for it's an issue of these kinds of robberies on Michigan Avenue and also Oak Street and the other associated shopping areas there. What, again, to Kevin's earlier question, what can we do?
Well, as I said, we're doubling our patrols. We can catch these offenders and bring them to justice. And then from that point, it's up to the state's attorney. That's probably the topic of another show.
That's the topic coming up in just a few minutes.
But all we can do is make every effort we can to catch them.
So the idea is once they're caught, like let's say we grab up the people, it's seven or eight people that were doing this. Because they go into a store, they didn't actually assault anybody. The assault on the street would be handled, I would imagine, differently. I would hope differently. But if they go into a store and they steal stuff and then they get away, there's a story out there, and please confirm it if it's true or deny it if it's not, that you have to basically get caught stealing in a store multiple times before they will actually hold you overnight in jail here.
Well, the state's attorney's office is using 10 offenses as the number where they'll take it seriously. If you're convicted and 10 misdemeanor offenses of theft.
Convicted
on your 11th
or charged
one,
with?
Convicted.
So you have to go through the whole conviction process.
Go through the whole process. And after 10 misdemeanors, they'll take it more seriously. But you need to get to that number before they escalate the case.
Well, Louis Vuitton, they said it was $50,000 in merchandise.
Right,
stolen.
So
that's a felony.
These would be felony cases.
Why is it 10? That seems high to me.
It's an arbitrary number. That's something that state's attorney's office came up with early in the term of the current state's attorney. I'm not sure where she got that number. I imagine that'll be a topic of much debate in the upcoming campaign for that office.
Oh, you think so? Yes, well, it's going to start because Bob Fioretti is going to join us coming up in a few minutes. He is a candidate for Cook County State's Attorney. He's a candidate for a lot of things. I know he's sort of perpetually been running for things for a long time, but he is a guy that was a longtime alderman in Chicago, and he thinks that Kim Fox doesn't even have the proper amount of signatures on her petitions. So we'll find out about that. I mean, it's like, It's a scary moment because Chicago, as much as people want to decry downtown, if you don't live downtown or you don't work downtown, you're like, oh, downtown, they're all fancy people. They're doing this. They're doing that. They're the cause of the problem. It's actually the engine that drives the economy of the city. And if you didn't have the businesses and you didn't have the tax returns, the property tax returns from downtown and the North Side and all the Gold Coast and all the rest of that stuff, this city would have a huge financial problem. And they say, well, why do you spend all those resources down there? Well, that's the reason.
Yeah, and people talk about retail theft as a victimless crime. The companies can survive and they've built it into their bottom line. That's not necessarily true. We're at the point now where the loss prevention specialists on Michigan Avenue are telling us that their inventory shrinkage rates have doubled in the last 3 years, from an average of 5% up to 10%. Stores are going to start to close. They can't possibly compete in this Amazon world
and
where
people
they're,
will get fired.
And have theft at that level. They're going to start closing their stores. That affects jobs. That affects the character of the community. That affects Michigan Avenue as a retail tourist destination. We all suffer for that. It's not a victimless crime. And the other piece of this is the increased violence that we're seeing with these shoplifters. Shoplifters used to want to get in and get out and not really attract any attention.
Undetected.
Now they're physically attacking the security guards. They're attacking the store staff. They're showing this increasing tendency towards violence that we never used to see. These are not victimless crimes. These are serious violent crimes, and they need to be taken seriously.
Alderman Brian Hopkins from the 2nd Ward here in the city of Chicago. Thank you very much, Alderman. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys.
As always. All right, we got the news coming up, and then we'll talk about Free Already, who wants to take on the current Cook County State's Attorney on the other side.
Extremely local news from your neighborhood at 718. Bob Surratt, WGN Mornings 5 to 9. WGN.
Super Tramp on 720 AM.
Missed the post. He's losing a step.
Yeah, well, I also was talking to the alderman, former alderman, standing right here. And we'll explain that in just a second. I got Super Tramp tickets. That's the whole point we're playing. That's why we're playing Super Tramp right now. I have actually Roger Hodgson, formerly of Super Tramp. There were two guys of Super Tramp. He's one of them. And he's going back on tour playing the music of Super Tramp, playing some of his own stuff. And he's going to be at the Silver Creek Event Center at the Four Winds New Buffalo in February, the 22nd. That's an 8 o'clock Chicago time show, 9 o'clock New Buffalo time. Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape. I got tickets coming up a little bit later on in the program to go see that. That is going to be one hell of a show. All right, former Alderman Bob Fioretti is with us right now. He wants to be the new Cook County State's Attorney. And let me explain why this is important. Because the current Cook County State's Attorney, we're seeing a rash of nuisance crimes, of the kinds of there's a different sense of lawlessness in this city than there has been in a while. Yes, the murder rate is down and the murder clearance numbers are up, but you got to go, the clearance numbers have a lot to do with police work, as much to do with, not more with police work than they do with what happens once they actually get into the system. Right. Once they get into the criminal justice system, which is what the Cook County State's Attorney is there for. If you go to county jail right now, county jail is not at capacity. It's not even at 40% capacity right now. There's a lot of empty beds, but there's the whole idea of the social justice movement, which I don't completely disagree with, is that we don't want to incarcerate a lot of people and divert their lives for making mistakes when they're a little younger. But when people make consistent mistakes when they're younger, that sort of tells us that maybe that's a path that they're going down. And I don't think that the Cook County State's Attorney's Office is properly looking at that. What say you?
I think you summarized the whole position. There is no way under Kim Fox's so-called, and I mean so-called social justice, on what she's doing. The robberies that have been happening on Michigan Ave, you can get away with 10 of them before you're really convicted. And before they charge you with a felony. You have to look at her whole program on what she's doing. People with guns that get caught over the weekend are out the next day. Right. We've got to stop that. If there must be accountability, there must be transparency in our system. And under her view, there is no accountability. You can keep committing as many mistakes as you want before you're caught and you're punished for what you do.
There's also a breakdown of the juvenile criminal justice system as well, because it's bad on both ends. It's too draconian on its worst end, and it's too soft on its intake end. And there doesn't seem to be a consistent philosophy about how they want to actually address juvenile criminality in Chicago.
Well, if you go to the juvenile criminal system, we should be the model, and in the past we have been, but all of a sudden we forget what we should do. We have courts that address first-time offenders, veterans court, women's court, mental health court, and drug court. You get caught the first time, let's say with drugs, small amount, the judge will usually give you a pass and say come back within 6 months, but you have to meet these conditions. You meet those conditions, your record's closed, nobody knows that you were even arrested. We need to utilize those systems, those diversionary programs to help people, to help the youth that are out there. Veterans, you know, as you probably know, one-third of the people that are homeless here in this city are veterans. We need to take care of them. And yes, they do commit crimes, but they need diversionary programs too. Women's court, mental health courts. We've got to start using our criminal justice system in the right way instead of just saying, oh no, everybody gets a free pass, gets free out of jail.
All right, we'll come back on the other side. I want to ask you where, if you were to take two things that you would do on your first day, I'll give you three. We'll play rule of threes here. Three things. So you got extra homework here, Bob. Three things you would do on your first day if you were to become the Cook County State's Attorney this year after the election in November. The primary, though, is coming up in just 2 months, right?
Correct.
Primary
March 17th.
March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. I love a St. Patrick's Day election in Chicago. There is, it's corruption with corned beef and beer all together.
Lots of beer.
That's what I love.
Yes,
that's what I love about that in Chicago. We'll talk about that. And to take your phone calls, if you have a suggestion for how to fix this problem, 312-981-7200, your idea is as good as anybody's. I can just tell you that right now, the way this is going. 312-981-7200. Right now, let's check in with Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the roads and the skies?
For news at 10, watch WGN. Micah Mater, Joe Donlan, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV News at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN.
Rob Khan Show right here, 720 WGN. All right, Bob Fioretti, longtime Chicago alderman, and now he wants to be the new Cook County State's Attorney. He's running in the primary, which is coming up in just a few months now. It's not even, it's funny, it's like the election season just kind of kicked right here. And obviously, you know, we've been talking about the presidential election for, well, for 4 years, essentially. But now the local races start to kick in, and you get a lot, and there's going to be a lot of stuff on television. There's probably the most hot race, though, is you, is this one, is yours.
I believe so.
Yeah, most people are interested in.
Yeah.
So that's why on this show, we're going to specifically focus on it from time to time throughout the next couple of weeks, because it is, it's, and we invite Kim Fox to come on and tell her side of the story. I just don't understand, as she has been state's attorney, I do not understand what she's doing as state's attorney. I didn't understand the Jussie Smollett thing at all. She acknowledges in the aftermath that it was kind of a bad idea, the way that it was handled, or bad.
It was sort of kind of an apology.
Yeah.
Sort of, kind of.
But it was,
yes.
But not a full.
Not a full.
No, I need a full. Oh, my God. I completely effed that up. That's what I was looking for. Because I've had to say that. I mean, you know, and everybody knows when they completely screw something up, right?
Yep. Yeah. Well, short
I think
is
in any other.
Good.
Yeah, but any other county in the state, somebody, the state's attorney would have probably have been censured or lost their law license over how it was handled. There's no doubt. She took a call from some famous person, as I raised my hand in quotes, and that person directed the way the course of the investigation was going to go. And then she all of a sudden says, I'm recusing myself out of this. And lo and behold, she didn't recuse herself, because she would have had to recuse her whole staff.
Sure.
She lied to the public. That's it. As simple as
can't
it.
Can't have the state's attorney doing that.
No.
I know it's very popular to lie now as a politician, but it doesn't really help. Doesn't, I mean, I know politicians always, people say, well, they've always been lying. Well, yeah, but we don't expect that. We don't want that. That should be a point against you, not a point for you. And that's just not good enough. For me, as a Cook County resident my whole life, and as a Chicagoan my whole life, I don't like it.
Well, I was part of a faculty down in Champaign the first week of October, and it was judges and lawyers from around the state, and it was a webcast too. And we talked about ethics, and we talked about how lawyers especially state's attorneys, must maintain the highest of ethics, because we looked at them to... the state's attorney's position is the most powerful position in this county. They can take away your liberty. They can take away your property. And if you don't have faith in that person who's doing the prosecution, you have no faith in the criminal justice system.
It's a gigantic office, too.
Yes, it is.
You know, there's lawyers upon lawyers upon... There's lawyers for lawyers who have lawyers. That's how it goes. And they do a lot... They do things beyond just what you imagine them going into court with, you know, a big stack of papers and sitting down and taking on a defense attorney who's asleep at the desk. this, there's more to it than just that. They do civil litigation as
Lots
well.
Lots of civil, yes.
That's a big
tax
piece.
Appeals.
Yes.
They have to approve that. Yes. So when people think about just a state's attorney, they think only in the criminal realm.
Well, Bob,
they're far removed from it.
So, you know, if you go back in the history of state's attorneys, Richard M. Daley was the state's attorney of Cook County. That's how
he was.
Is how he worked his way into becoming mayor of the city of Chicago. That was one of the paths that he used to get there. But that was it was a repository a long time, almost a figurehead repository for people who were on their way either up or down the political scales in steps in Chicago. Right? Not even in Cook County, I would argue, in Chicago. But the Cook County State's Attorney office was used for that. So now the question is, does the state's attorney really have that much? Because it's an elected position, and often they are put there by other kingmakers, and this is how Chicago politics works, right? It's not necessarily who the most qualified person is, but it's who the most connected person is. That's the way it has always been. Do they really run that office, or are they run by, or is that office really run by the professionals who've been there, and many great professionals have been there for decades?
Well, I do. A lot of the professionals have left. That were there. They've gone elsewhere. But you can almost call the state's attorney's offices in our collar counties and ask how many resumes have you received from people who were or are state's attorneys here in this county. They're fleeing. The professional who ran the office is no longer there.
So they're being replaced by people internally, though, who've been there for a while, or is there just a total brain drain?
I have heard of people who, and I know people who have been interviewed, and they have been offered some significant positions, and they've turned them down. So I think
because of Kim Fox, would you argue, or because of why?
I think because of her approach to criminal justice, her approach to the civil justice system, and how to handle tax appeals here. Yeah, it's
what about the tax appeals? Explain that, because that touches everybody.
Well, I believe, as most of the newspapers have, the final appeals have to go through the state's attorney's office. They approve them or they challenge them. There's been really no challenges. It's been a routine nod of the and a wink, wink nod of the head and off
to the assessor's office.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So you see your high taxes. It's because of what's happening there, too.
And this assessor ran as a reformer.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so, he's trying his way through the system, but he's got a long way to go.
You've been inside the system a long time, Bob Fioretti.
No, I fought the system a long time.
Well, but you had a key to the door. So you were in, you had a key to the
Eight
office
years
door.
Of being an alderman shows you a lot. Yes.
If you, Bob Fioretti, former Chicago alderman, had to turn around and just, I gave you 3 days and a magic wand, what would you change to change that system? And should the system change?
Well, I'd impose term limits, smaller city council sizes, get rid of a lot of these suburban governments and how they're operating. When you have a city that only has 250 people, you got to start scratching your head that they've got a full staff, a full police department, a full fire department, sanitation. What are they doing? How many relatives can you put on the payroll?
Right.
And that's what happens, especially like down in McCook. What was it, 15 or 17 of his members are all on the payroll.
Yeah. Yeah. My guess is there can be a lot of orange jumpsuits that are going to be handed out for the people who are part of this, because it seems like the FBI, this has always been very fertile hunting for federal agencies here to take down, especially big fish, right? But now they're finding that in these, exactly what you're talking about, in these small suburban communities, they're finding the level of corruption is just off the charts.
And you can tie it into the red light cameras. Look what's happening there. Campaign contributions and how you do it. We've got to limit campaign contributions across the board, whether you're running for mayor or whether you're running
for alderman.
There are
no limits, right, in Illinois.
Well, the cap gets busted if somebody gives $100,000 into a race, such as this race. The cap was busted by the Conways.
Right.
So
then there are no caps.
There are, yeah, right. Anybody can write a check as big as they want, And that's what's happening here in this race. The unions have given Kim Fox a significant number, and the same thing with Conway and his father. And they keep talking about the resources, and they just keep writing the check.
I'm always confused by why the unions would be so interested in the state's attorney's office, because they have less skin in the game than they do in most of the other major county or municipal offices, because the state's attorneys are not there. Are they AFSCME or what are they?
SEIU and AFSCME are all in there. Yes.
They're in there, but the attorneys are they union as well?
No.
Okay, no. But that, so there, obviously they're going to be there for the workers and some of the other, and there, and so the state's attorney's office, almost infamously, has its own law enforcement arm as well, right?
Right.
They sometimes not used for the best purposes, as we learned in the 1960s and 1970s.
But yeah, you just said something about we have over almost 200 law enforcement agencies here in the county of Cook, and so the state's attorney has to work with each and every one of those.
Right.
So it is a big job.
Yeah, I understand what a big job is. I just never understood why the union money. I get why the union money goes to the sheriff or not to the sheriff, because he's got all those employees are unionized, or to, you know, some of the other people who have a lot of unionized employees underneath him. But it just seems
technically the state's attorney should be negotiating the contracts on behalf of the county.
Well, that's double dealing, isn't it?
So that becomes a problem. Yes. But does anybody care here in Cook County? No.
It's crazy. I mean, you know, people go, what's wrong with your town? I go, how much time do you have? You know, it's sort of like you could, there are a lot of different ways here, but I think you're right. I mean, I'm not a gigantic term limits guy, but locally, it does seem to make more sense.
I wasn't either, but when you look at the top 15 cities in the country, top 10, out of the top 10, only two have term limits. Don't have term limits. Chicago and I believe Philadelphia.
Oh, things are going great there. They never had a problem in their life. No.
Right. And look at New York has, 51 city council people. They have 8.4 million. L.A. is now way up there, 4 million people. They only have 15. Houston's right on our tail right now, and they have 15 or 16, too.
This whole idea of cutting the city council in half, because we have 50 aldermen.
Right.
Who are their own kings, right?
Fiefdom.
I mean, they run their wards, and they are really the purveyors of all pleasure and pain in the ward in terms of whether or not, you know, you need a business license or you're going to get a loading zone in front of your business or whatever it is. It's all up to the alderman just to make a decision, right?
Well,
it's a yes or no.
You know, I've always been against and became more and more against the idea of aldermanic privilege. We don't need it. A lot of this can be run by 311 on all the issues that come before somebody. And at the same time, we ought to expedite systems so people can get permits here. Business. We should be enveloping and folding our arms and looking at people and saying, if you have a business, we want to help you and bring it in here in the city of Chicago. We've got, as I look down Michigan Ave right now, a 29% vacancy rate.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable for Michigan Ave.
Yeah. I mean, the city needs help. And if the city doesn't get healthy, then the entire metropolitan area.
Right. It's because this city is the economic engine. We have the airport. We've got, from what I last saw, 40,000 badged employees at the airport. You know, think about that. That's a center of economic growth and development.
Yes,
the only way we're going to get out of this problem that we have is by bringing business in, making sure our streets are safe with a good state's attorney and enforcing the law. And so we don't have the robbery that we have almost on a constant basis here on Michigan Ave and other places.
Former Alderman Bob Fioretti wants to be your Cook County State's Attorney. You have a website?
And what?
Do you have a website?
Yes, I think it's Bob for State's Attorney.
The number four? Or the word for?
F-O-R.
Okay. All right. Bob for State's Attorney. God, I hope there's not some other Bob out there. That's you got the URL. That's the important thing. Bob, thanks so much, as always, for being
good.
With us. Appreciate
always good
it.
To be here.
All right. We've coming up on the other side. We're going to find out exactly why it is. We were talking yesterday about weed and why all these shops have run out of the weed. And we're like, well, because it has to be grown in Illinois. We figured out what the real problem is. It has to do with the plant itself. We have an expert joining us on the other side. But right now, the news with Kim Gordon. From Concho with Anna DeVlantis. No, she's on. Anna DeVlantis is on.
Previously with Anna DeVlantis.
Kevin Powell on sports. Lauren Lapka on the traffic and the corrections of things, and then the weather too. Somehow.
I don't know. Kevin jumped on that before I could say anything about the correction right there.
Anna DeVlantis
and Kim Gordon, of course, on the news. Of course, Anna DeVlantis is a longtime co-host of this radio program, and now you can hear Anna from 1 to 3 every afternoon, right here on 720 WGN. That's what I meant to say. Mm-hmm. But old habits die very hard, especially when you're stoned. Speaking of that, Andy Seeger is with us. He is the cannabis research manager at Brightfield Group. Now, there's a reason that we brought Andy in with us today, because there was some confusion here. People are very upset, even people who are not even going to take part in the marijuana consumption here now that it's legal in the state of Illinois. People are upset that Illinois still screwed this up in some way, or it feels like they screwed it up in some way, because we're always looking for a mistake that's been made. And in the first couple of days of having marijuana being legal, you had a number of these dispensaries just run out of the product. In part, as we explained yesterday, it's because all the stuff that's being sold, all the product being sold in dispensaries in Illinois has to be produced in Illinois.
Correct.
Right? And so the production line is limited and wasn't fully up to speed. But then people are like, well, still, why didn't they plan ahead? So, Andy, still, why didn't they plan ahead? How does that work?
Yeah, I think we have to take this in context. This is one of the better rollouts, even with its problems. Every rollout has problems. Every rollout will have shortages. Every rollout will have regulatory challenges and hurdles to overcome. Every rollout will have some unknowns going out. I think one of the things here that we have to keep in mind is that this was a very accelerated rollout. This went from legislation, the first in the country, to actually be a bill that passed from our legislation. It was signed by our governor. It was part of his platform that he ran on. And then it became a bill and came into law all last year, and then January 1, obviously. So that's at a very...
So other states had gone in a longer period of time than that?
It's all been referendum, so it's a ballot initiative. They know that they want it. They say they want it on a ballot, and then they vote for it, and then the government has to supply the structure. And they can take as long as they want to. Maine is sitting on 2 years' worth of just sitting on a bill that said that they should have legalized marijuana.
But if people are already investing in doing that without knowing that it's finally going to get done, I mean, doesn't that – until it's actually done – because I know here in Illinois, you know, when the medical part started, that – and we mention this all the time, and it's because it's worth talking about. The first people who were involved in this, did the medical dispensaries and the medical grow centers, had to – give $250,000 non-refundable with their application to do that business. So if you got turned down for the business for any reason, you lost $250,000. And so the price of entry was very high.
Very high.
And there were a lot of companies that were like, all right, I don't want to risk in Illinois with the politics of going in and then getting screwed.
Yeah, the risk of the barriers to entry are very high for everybody. Until we see this next trench come out of small business and minority owners, the barriers of entry of cost of what you need, somebody to proofread your application, lawyers to look over it, different ideas, all these cost money. And they cost people that aren't in the industry or haven't had their...
It's not a one-page application.
No. There are multiple points, and there are people out there getting every point. You know, we are told that there are... if there are 50 licenses in the city limits or so, 47, we're told that there's over... that many perfect scores in terms of how many were charged or how many were given perfect scores by the state.
Wow. You talked about how Maine and Lauren, I know you talked about Oregon has all like warehouses full of it.
Mm-hmm. Surpluses.
Obviously, there are restrictions though because they have to right. It has to be grown in Illinois. Yep. Obviously, something would have to happen at the federal level. But will there be an opportunity for states to purchase it from other states?
You know, that's interstate commerce, and that gets into further federal things. The federal government right now has kind of taken its hands off a lot of things. There are some other movements that have gone through the Congress in various steps, protecting banking, protecting states' acts more and more, but they haven't quite passed. So the federal government is still very much behind. So the states are very weary of doing anything to make the federal government even take a couple steps back. Interstate commerce would do that. But we have seen Oregon has passed a bill that said that they are open to shipping across state lines if somebody would like to take their excess of supply.
But wait a second. Doesn't that screw the manufacturers? Like, let's say in Illinois.
Yep.
Let's say the federal government tomorrow decided they're going to make this all legal, interstate commerce of it all legal. So now it's in Oregon that's got nothing but warehouses full of skeech. Yep. can just now say, all right, we're going to FedEx it to you in Chicago and you guys can, you know, do whatever you want with it. The people who are the growers here who have spent millions upon millions of dollars for these really complicated growth centers, people who have, you know, if you've seen these things on television, they are incredibly complicated pieces. It's not just agriculture, it's 21st century science, and there's a big dollar amount, and then those people will be SOL, and that's a technical term.
Yeah, that kind of change could come and completely capsize the entire industry, and a lot of states, I think you would see, would have protectionist views on what they wanted their marijuana policy to be in terms of national presence, but this could very well become a national market. We argue it almost is a national market, given that companies are moving between these states and setting up their footprints in multiples of these states.
Because you have big companies that have these things, but they're working state by state as opposed to across state lines.
Yes, exactly. And they're getting really, really good at it, and they're getting at scale. So, you know, the industry and the scale is about to be there. This has hit critical mass, and we're not going back. So this is here to stay.
Well, can I ask you, I want to take a quick break. On the other side, I want to ask you about investment in this, because people are, you know, everybody's like, oh, man, I got to get involved in this early on.
Going to have some money.
Yeah,
it is a fun Thanksgiving dinner, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I'll bet. I mean, because people even if they don't want to be a part of this, they see that it's going to be, it's potentially very profitable, and, you know, they don't want to miss out. I mean, just imagine if you'd invested in alcohol, right, in the 1930s. Apple. I think that's the idea, right? Yeah. Or Apple early on or whatever it is. This is an interrupter, and it's a big deal. So we'll talk to Andy about that on the other side. Andy Seeger is with us, who is he's an expert in all this. That's all you need to know at this very moment. All right, let's check in with Lauren. What's happening in the traffic and the weather? Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. All right, we got Super Tramp tickets coming your way after next hour. Also, a top five at five, which is going to include, that's the list of the top five things that we think you should hear today on your way home, including some of the stuff that's happening downtown, some of the crime stuff, the interesting audio from that. The business owner says he's been robbed twice in 2 weeks. He doesn't know what the hell to do about it. And it's not funny, but it's laughable. And then there's a coyote on the loose in the Gold Coast. How residents are responding to that. All right. We are talking to a weed expert here, Andy Seeger. And he is the cannabis research manager at Brightfield Group. And we were talking, last question I asked you. There's a lot of mechanics to all of this, and one of the things is, why is it that it's taking so long for Illinois to get the product being grown and all of that? And that seems to be – that will be – the supply chain will eventually meet up with demand at some point or at least catch up with it. This is happening to other states, as you point out. The weed does take a while to grow, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it is a weed. Yeah. So from seeds in the ground to a usable plant, how long is that?
You can do anything from about 10 to 12 weeks on the short side, and then you're going to need to dry that and process it from there on. So it's going to take a number of months for legal in the ground plants to come all the way to market.
And these grow facilities, mm-hmm. Which are mostly indoors, right? Mostly in the hydroponic world, like that's not like out in the field like corn is being grown here, right?
Yeah. More and more we are seeing sun grown. That comes with problems of cross-fertilization and cross-fertilization with hemp that has no THC, which would be a problem.
Right.
But yeah, a lot of the stuff in Illinois is going to be medical. That's going to come from grow houses.
Yeah. Okay. And that's fun when you see those grow houses. All right. Now, how do we make money? We don't want to get stoned, but we do want to make money off of this business. What's the way to do it?
Yeah, I think right now there's a lot of volatility. This last year we saw a lot of the capital markets dry up for some of the valuations. The valuations were probably in a bubble compared to a lot of these companies. We saw some big numbers out there. You know, Constellation Brands here in Chicago acquired Canopy a couple of years ago for a very large
number. That's a Canadian company, right?
Yeah, Canadian company. And they're partnering and they're doing a hemp farm in New York and they're going to bring down some CBD products all of a sudden now. But, you know, Canopy is very, very big up in Canada.
Because New York's not, hasn't gone legal yet.
Has not. So they have a hemp farm up by their Canandaigua facility for other things. But yeah, there's a lot of volatility here. And we're seeing some stalwarts, some very big companies that in the beginning, the MSOs, the multi-state operators, some of the ones that were moving and shaking are now a little bit in a bind. The capital is kind of dried up. There's a lot of churn. There's a lot of volatility.
So the capital is dried up. So I'm assuming these would be private equity kind of investors who are helping them out, because it can't be. It's not on the stock market, right?
No, unless you wanted to go to the Canadian stock market or another sort of
foreign stock market, right? But on the domestic stock markets, because it's again not federally legal. It's a risk, and so private equity can invest in it.
Yep.
But private equity investing in it can also lead to a lot of questions, because these private equity guys, I don't know if you've ever met them, but they are all business
speculative.
They love the idea of it, but if it turns on you in just a little bit, if it's not making 40% an hour, they get mad about it.
Yeah.
So this is, and it's slowing up, right?
It is, yeah. And we saw there was a conference here in Chicago just a couple months ago to match venture capitalists with these kind of companies that are needing the startup funds. So,
but it's going to be huge.
It's going to be huge. Placing your money anywhere right now is very, very risky, because we don't know. The next Bud Light for marijuana has not been made yet. It's going to be a lot of small brands until these pick up and they find their niches and they really run.
So we know the computer has been made, but who knew it was going to be Apple?
Sure.
And then when you get beyond Apple, who knew that in terms of marketing,
iPhones.
Who's going to be Google, right? Who's going to be the – because all of those things are going to be there. All right. So right now you'd sort of keep your powder dry a little on this, pardon the expression?
Yeah, there are some companies out there doing it well. Edibles had a really good year this year. They really increased their ability to have rapid onset times, more bioavailability.
That was a problem.
That is just, it's industry speak for chemistry. But basically, it hits you a little bit more like a beer now. So they're shortening that time so that you don't have that bad edible experience.
Yes, because people were taking them and an hour later not feeling anything, then taking two or three more, and the next thing you know, they're in an emergency room talking to their hand.
Yes.
All right, let's talk about pot all day long. I read this article over the weekend about, I think the Tribune had it, about you might have even been quoted in, as far as I know, that there's a lifestyle to this. There are people who are using THC-based products from the minute they wake up till they go to bed.
Absolutely. Yep. So within our study, or within our research, we have identified a group of people that we call microdosing mamas. They're usually tending to be female, but they use very low dosages. We're talking about 1 milligram to 2 milligrams at a time throughout the day, kind of taking in the edge off, or it's anxiety, or it's a little bit just of a stress and calm.
Dealing with the kids.
Yeah. There are some ratio stuff that they mix in some CBD for a little bit of calmness. That microdosing is a niche as well. But on the opposite side, there's macrodosing. So this industry has something for everyone.
That'd be Kevin, the microdosing.
Well, I think there are a lot of people that followers, they're not going to. They now that it's legal, some people you basically create a whole new market of people who say, "Well, I've kind of been on the fence about it, but it's legal, so maybe I'll dabble
jump
into
back
it,
in.
Jump back into it, or Which never is... try for the first time." I can't believe I'm even asking this question, but what's like a good starter kit for someone who hasn't really done it for many years, or is just getting into it and wants to try it out?
Sure. One of the segments we have is called a boomerang, and it's the boomer that used to use and stop for a long time and now is back, mm-hmm. and they need to like kind of figure it out again. I gave
Grandpa.
My mom a pen that has no button on it, and she can just take a drag and have a USB cord when it goes out. Otherwise, pick yourself up a joint. It's going to be not the highest quality, but it's going to be very, very easy for you. There's no accessories. You can dabble in flower. That's how most people get into
it. Okay, wait. We have to explain the lingo here.
Yeah.
So flower is like what we use. That's actual, the green, that's the stuff that we used to roll in the joint, right?
Little baggies.
Yes, right, that's
little
the
grinder.
Actual.
Yeah,
the little stuff. Right, that's the flower. That's what they call it. And if people want to roll a joint, you said it's not going to be the highest quality. What does that mean?
Usually the stuff that goes into joints is the bottom of the what comes out of when they process all the weed. Mm-hmm. It's loose shake is a term. So sometimes there are very high quality joints out there that have either keef or oil or other things in them that will increase the THC potency. But a lot of the times the bottom level product is used for joint.
Okay, what about people that don't know how to inhale but are afraid of the edible stories that we were just talking about?
Yeah, if you're afraid of the edible stories, you know, the moniker is go start low, go slow. So you can do a one, you can do a 2.5 and see how that takes you. There are other...
What is a one and a two and a half?
Oh, sorry, milligrams. So that's one of the things that people are going to need to get more educated about, and that is out there for the industry is consumer education. You know, think of milligrams as kind of an ABV, like a beer. So 5 milligrams is roughly about average, is what the normal person could take and feel something. Cutting that down and going to the micro, to the ones, the twos, that's where you kind of start low and go slow. From there on up, there are other things.
You
like
don't
topicals.
Want paranoia taking over here, because that's I mean, that's a thing. And I mean, it's, I dabbled a little bit in high school, and it I couldn't do it because I would get immediately
panic attacks.
Yeah, panicky. So and
that stuff is atomic now, so you might want to watch out now.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? I mean, that so you have to, if you really want to get into this and try to save my liver. Although I don't know if this helps my liver, I haven't quite figured that out yet. But it is a slower. Like you said, you got to start slow and see what you can actually tolerate.
Yes, everybody's going to be different. So, you know, what works for one person may not work for another. So when you're at your dispensary, get a bud tender that is willing to answer questions. And if they won't answer questions, go to another dispensary, because bud tender should be there to help answer any questions that you have about these products. And you should leave feeling good about the product you have. So if they're not going to answer questions, or they're not there to really ask you the questions that will get you to that product, find someone else.
All right, Andy Seeger, Cannabis Research Manager. I love that business card right there.
They didn't like pothead. So,
Stoner at large.
Oh, my God. In high school, they were like, you're a pothead. Yeah. You're not going to end up anywhere, my friend.
And now I'm head of pot. So.
Andy, we'll talk to you again. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
We got the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in 2 minutes.
The live and local sound of Radio Chicago, 720 WGN.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five, let's go.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right. The top five things that we think you need to know, that you need to hear to make your afternoon complete.
Always very exciting.
Yes. Sometimes it's hard news stuff. Sometimes it's lighter fare. But mostly it's one hard news thing and then all lighter fare. But that's how that goes. But we figure that it's an important thing to know. So we start at
number five.
And here is Defense Secretary Mark Esper facing a number of questions from reporters at a briefing this afternoon, of course, on the situation in Iraq concerning the Iranian general who was killed by U.S. forces. Here is CNN Pentagon correspondent Barbara Starr asking about the push for de-escalation before bringing up President Trump's threat to target Iranian cultural sites.
If you get an order, would you resign from office rather than violate the law?
Barbara, I'm not going to get into some hypothetical that you're portraying here. I'm fully confident that the president is not going to, the commander-in-chief will not give us an illegal order. And as I said, the United States military will, as it always has, obey the laws of armed conflict.
And escalation, does the U.S. have any responsibility or obligation to also de-escalate, or is that, in your view, solely in Iran's court?
Well, we're not the ones that have escalated this over the past arguably 40 years and certainly over the past several months. And so at this point, as I've said a few times now, the ball is in their court. What they do next will determine what happens in the subsequent moves.
Among the other things that Mark Esper said today in the Pentagon is much of what you heard yesterday on the program. We had Congressman Adam Kinzinger, who's also a member of the United States Air Force and a sitting U.S. congressman. He thought that the killing of this Iranian general was justified. And he said it was justified because Americans may not actually have been paying a lot of attention, and there have been other things that have not been highly publicized that have been going on in this conflict with Iran, a proxy conflict that's been going on in the Middle East, throughout in Syria. We have been against Iranian forces. We deal with Iranian-backed terrorists in Iraq and in other parts of the Middle East and in places in Africa as well. Because, as you know, we just, as a matter of fact, a Chicago serviceman just lost his life in
Kenya,
right? After there was a terrorist attack there by Al-Shabaab. And some of the funding that goes to these terrorist organizations like Al-Shabaab comes from Iran. And the guy who was in charge of that, the guy who was basically running the external wars for Iran, and some of them cloak and dagger wars, was this Soleimani guy. And that's what that's the argument that Mark Esper made. And that was the argument that has been made by the Congressman Kinzinger, and you know, as many, and I have a lot of disputes with the way things are going in America right now. I'm not 100% crazy about the tone and the tenor. This was a decision that I think a lot of politicians, as we now know, passed on. But we have moved to another stage of this with Iran, and the question really is: are we going to stop Iran's constant tinkering with the process in the Middle East, because it does affect us and it does affect our allies in the Middle East? And this is a question. We'll have to just see where this all unfolds, I should say. But at the moment, it's what's done is done. And the big question that was being asked there, and it's important to point this out, the big question that was being asked there is it would be technically a violation of a United Nations treaty to target cultural or religious sites in a war situation. And we're not technically at war, but if Iran continues, if they retaliate for this and they escalate the situation, then the president says he will escalate the situation and he will go after those. And the question to Mark Esper was, would you go and it would technically be an illegal order, based on the way that the Uniform Code of Military Justice operates and the way that the rules and regulations of the United States military is set down by the Pentagon. So the question then becomes, would he execute that illegal order in order to be done, right? Mm-hmm. And he says that he doesn't believe that would actually happen. Then the question was, well, if it did happen, would you resign? And he didn't want to speculate on that, which, I mean, who would want to speculate on that? And you know, you understand the problem that people have here which is, you know, they have these jobs. They believe that they want to be responsible guardians of the United States. And they're just hoping that the president didn't quite understand that would be a conflict for these professionals who are working in the Pentagon. Because it's not just, hey, do what I say, and it's just fine, and I'll pardon you on the other side. It's far more complicated than that. So that's what he was responding to there, and it's a difficult situation. The problem is, even when Democrats are asked about this, they always start with, well, you know, Soleimani was a bad guy. Everybody acknowledges that. The question is, at what point have we now found ourselves, and where do we go from here? So. That is to be seen.
How do we make it better, not worse?
Yes. Right. I'd like to see less people dead. And I'd like to see the Iranians less involved in all of this. And I think everybody would. And I think the Iranians would like to see their government less involved in this. All right. We'll get to your 4, 3, 2, and 1 of the top 5 at 5. But first, Lauren Lapko, what's happening on the roads and in the skies?
Extremely local news from your neighborhood at 718. Bob Surratt, WGN Mornings 5 to 9. WGN.
When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for updated forecasts from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling, weeknights on WGN TV.
We will continue with the top 5 at 5. I just want to tell you, that's the 5 most important things that you need to hear today. Now, when I say important, that's a really relative term. It's the 5 most entertaining and or important and or feckless things. I don't know. It depends. I said feck. All right. I want to say this, though. Coming up after the news at the bottom of the hour, so about 5:38, we're going to talk about the 737 MAX. Now, you're thinking, why is that important to me? If you are planning a summer vacation, there's a likelihood, actually, that the 737 MAX will be back flying Would you fly it? Should you fly it? We will answer you only that's between you, your family, and your God, whether you would fly it. But should you fly it, we'll give you some of the answers to how they're going to make that work. I've been wondering about this the whole time, and I'm like an aviation geek. I love flying. I love going to an airport. I don't know. I'm
taking a flight with Ro is like a kid in a candy store. He's like, check this out. Look at that. Cool.
I do. I like to look out the window and watch all the little things that are driving around the plane. It's like, it is just so much fun. But, I'm not a nervous flyer. I'm a very confident flyer. I like the idea of it. I don't know what I would do about the 737 MAX, because it's like you almost know too much.
Oh, way too much. And not to mention, it's not like, okay, we fixed the problem, we're coming back. It's like, we fixed the problem, we're coming back. Oh, wait, no, we're not. Oh, wait, no, we're not again. Oh,
right.
Wait, for a
exactly.
Third time, we're not.
Exactly. So we'll talk about that coming up in just a little bit. So stay close, as we like to say. All right, here we go. We're at
number four.
Netflix has just released the chilling trailer for its upcoming documentary series about Aaron Hernandez. Remember Aaron Hernandez? He was a New England Patriot tight end. He was convicted of murder, right?
Mm-hmm.
He got to kill somebody in his house.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was acquitted of two other murders that everybody now subsequently thinks that he was involved in. Then he killed himself while he was in prison. I mean, it's just, it's a crazy, crazy, crazy story. It's a three-part series portraying the athlete's murder trial, conviction, and prison suicide. It debuts on January 15th, and in this trailer, Hernandez can then be heard talking on the phone to his mother, Terry, from prison.
No one has allegedly murdered two people and then played an entire season as a professional athlete.
Aaron Hernandez was a ticking time bomb. So why is the story here?
He was out to prove something, like a tough guy all the time.
He had a second residence,
the flop house. He had trouble with drugs, with guns.
How can an individual who has everything get involved in something like this?
I was the happiest little kid in the world, and you f***ed me up.
I ain't living with that.
You did. I had nobody. What do you think I was going to do? Become a perfect angel?
Ooh. Oh, now that's the installation. That's reverse Jewish/Catholic guilt is what that is. That's the kid guilting the parent.
I killed
you're
because
the reason
of you.
You're the reason I did this.
Oh, man. All right. That ought to be something to watch. All right. Checking in at
number three.
Oh, now this is the kind of thing that's happening downtown. We were been talking about this all day. All these snatch and grab, smash and grab, and pushing people down and stealing stuff. This is the owner of Sid Jerome Menswear in the Loop. If you've been downtown, you walk around the Loop, you see the Sid Jerome store. It has been there for over 50 years. So the owner is Scott Shapiro. He says in the last 2 weeks alone, he's been robbed twice. And he's released the camera footage of this. It shows, this is at Clark and Madison, by the way, in case you want to stop by and buy something. Things
yeah,
are half
buy,
off.
Don't yeah. take.
The film or the cameras have caught these thieves racing to a set of clothing racks and snatching armfuls of expensive jackets. And within seconds, they're trying to leave. More than 30 coats have been stolen. Shapiro broke a finger after falling through a glass display during the theft last week. Not even to mention the one this week. And these all appear to be juveniles who appear to be unafraid of arrest and prosecution.
They know what they're doing. This is a team that has obviously done this several times. We want the powers of be to do something about this. They have no fear of repercussions. They're frankly out there doing adult crimes without the fear of doing adult time.
That's from ABC7 right there. But I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the people who are putting them up to it, I don't think that they're necessarily going out and fencing. I don't think a 16-year-old's going out and fencing this stuff.
Right, because they're probably not going to be able to sell it on their own. They don't really have the right clientele, I'm sure.
But the people who are selling it, who are putting them up to going out and stealing this stuff, are using juveniles because they know that because the juveniles are unafraid because nothing's really going to happen to them.
Yeah. It's a problem.
The definition of a problem. Top five.
Number two.
Oh. Oh.
Another problem.
Yeah. A howling coyote was caught on camera by a near Northside resident right in his own backyard in broad daylight.
You don't want that.
No, that's like all those Halloween movies, right? Right. Uh-oh. Oh, no. All right, you know what? The bridge is washed out. I'm going to spend the night in the castle.
Yeah, that's not your average dog.
As Cook County's coyote population grows, Animal Care and Control fields more than 400 calls a year. Tim Akins came across his coyote, and it raised its head and howled out loud in his backyard. This is at North and Clybourne. Essentially, on one of those really expensive streets that's just on the north side of North Avenue, where there's multi-million-dollar mansions, this coyote has taste.
Yeah, you expect cougars, not coyotes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Thank you. Cougars who have now married their second husbands. he said this looked like a zoo.
So the coyote was laying right here. It spent about, you know, 4 or 5 hours here sleeping yesterday. Same one, because it's common with the limp that everybody's been reporting.
Now it's going to get a little ugly. So this is a spoiler alert. Small dogs might get mauled in the rest of this story. About a mile to the north at Willow and Burling Streets in Old Town, Linda Bocci's toy poodle, Kiki, was turned into a chew toy by a coyote as Bocci was attempting to leash the 5-pound puppy.
I reached for the dog, and he reached for the dog, and he got her first.
Oh, my God.
That is so sad.
Did the dog make it?
Yeah, what happened to the dog? The dog made it.
Oh, thank God. I was saying a prayer for Kiki, toy poodle.
We needed more information about Kiki. Okay. All right. Thank you. Now, Ken Fron, is that the guy's name? Ken Fron. First spotted the coyote at Akins' urging. He called 911 and Chicago Animal Care and Control.
Did Animal Control come out?
They did not. Well, this is becoming a little concerning for the community. If someone could have come out, tranquilized it, got it to a vet, fixed them up, brought them to a forest preserve, that would have been a really great ending to the story.
Yeah.
I saw two social media posts within the last 24 hours of people seeing. One was downtown on the north side. Someone caught a coyote running through the streets, and then one was out in the burbs. So I don't know what's going on.
Well, coyotes are protected in Illinois. It's a sanctuary state for coyotes, and they seem to understand exactly what they need to do.
Making themselves at home.
It's gotten around the coyote community. Right. This is a good place to go.
Head to Chicago.
You know, hang out.
Well, then one had to be rescued from the water today, right?
Yes, and how do you go about rescuing a coyote from
the
water?
That's a great question.
I just jump in there, Tommy, grab it by the collar. Good luck.
They had him on a stretcher later after they rescued him.
Tommy, you're the rookie on the dive team. It's your turn to go in and get the coyote. We want to thank CBS2 for the audio. Sure. All right, and finally on the top 5 of 5.
Number one.
California, people living in Midtown Sacramento are getting an earful from a nearby McDonald's that's blasting nonstop bagpipe music. The whole idea is to keep homeless people away. But residents that live in the... Now, what now? Are the homeless naturally opposed to the bagpipe?
Well, that's what I was curious about. Why the bagpipe? I mean, I could think of worse things that you could be blasting. What are the CIA used... to torture.
Oh, you're right. Like
heavy metal music or whatever.
Pantera,
it was.
I think is what they used. But the idea of the bagpipe. I'm not a big fan either. I hate to say that because I do a lot of stuff that involves a bagpipe in my off hours. Charitable stuff, charitable events, and it's there's always a bagpiper at these
certain
things.
Ceremonies.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I try to act like I'm really enjoying it, but I really don't enjoy any of it.
I enjoy a good bagpipe
session. As long as they're played well. Yes, not that bad.
No. Please don't tell them that I don't enjoy it because they're wearing the tartan and they got the stars and all that. It's very emotional. It makes you want to cry, but it makes you want to cry because it just makes you feel awful. Maybe that's the idea, but the rest of the people who are going through and trying to get a Big Mac, A number seven, please. Diet Coke. Like, that's going to help. I don't know how that's going to work. All right. Well, anyway, so here you are. These are the people, the apartment complex across the street from the McDonald's. It's driving them nuts.
The first couple days, they had it on 24/7. So if we wouldn't have said anything or reported it to the police, they would have had their thing going on still. It actually penetrates through the walls. Like, we can hear it. And I'm trying to watch TV or whatever, and it's going through that.
I think it's an absurd action to take instead of actually dealing with the issue.
It sticks in your head when you're, like, going somewhere else and you're not even in this neighborhood.
You know, I turn off the leaf blower, and I can still hear the bagpipes coming, and it's just, it's constant.
It was offensive to me because it's just so annoying.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yes. It turns out the homeless are still there. They are not being dissuaded by the bagpipe music.
Oh, man. Talk about driving someone crazy.
Right. The renters across the street, they got a problem. See, I mean, listen to that. I mean, seriously, who could listen to that all day long? Don't tell the Emerald Society that I said that. All right, let's do this. Let's close up the top five, and then on the other side, we're going to find out if you have summer vacation plans to include flying, how the 737 MAX might actually affect you. Don't go anywhere.
The top five at five.
Kim Gordon's got the WGN News right now. All right, the WGN newsroom will be continuing to watch this developing story that there is surface-to-surface missiles that were launched from Tehran against American assets in Iraq at the Al-Asad Air Base, which is one of the major military installations that the United States still has troops at in Iraq.
And, Ro, just a quick update. We don't have any confirmation of any casualties or injuries at this point. So we didn't know that, and we still don't.
And we're being told it's 10 rockets that were launched, 10 rockets that right now have been confirmed. And the Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps has taken credit for this. So, and there are U.S. troops that are housed there. And right now in Tehran, it would be the middle of the night, right? It would be about 3 o'clock in the morning, almost 3 o'clock in the morning. So, all right, or in Baghdad, I should say, because that's where these are landing. So, all right, we'll keep you up to date on that as details become available. Stay right here for that. All right, let's. We were talking about this spring and going into the summer. There are going to be 737 MAXs coming back online. I think that I know actually that American Airlines is right now projecting that they will start flying them later in the spring, somewhere in April, end of April to the beginning of May, depending on the routing, and then in June for United Airlines. And with all this news about the 737 MAX, and Mr. Burrow, he flies a lot for his job, Ryan Burrow from ABC News and from WGN. You hear him here. He covers this story for ABC News as well. You know, there's a lot of air miles, and I feel I love flying. It's very, very comfortable for me. It's not, I enjoy the whole experience. I'm one of the few people. I'm not sure I would fly on a 737 MAX. And that's what I want. And that now, even with all the changes that are being made here, there are more and more and more problems. What's the latest?
Well, we've got a couple things. And actually, I've got some breaking news that happened this afternoon. The FAA did confirm that it will meet this week with Boeing for that final audit before the certification, which will then lead to the beginning of the test flights. Now, Boeing wanted this to happen back in November, and it didn't. The FAA said it was not prepared to. So this is a positive step. We are still many steps away from these being certified and being back up in the air. And, you know, another big part of this is going to be the new CEO who's coming online starting next week, David Calhoun, and his job is going to be to help you, Ro, reestablish confidence in the brand. I mean, he's going to start with suppliers, try to get them back online to get this process back going, because those relationships were severed when they announced they were ending the development of this plane, or at least production of this plane for the time being. And that's going to halt here very soon. He's got to get on the horn with all of these airlines and help them build confidence that the planes that they're going to be flying in are going to be safe. Got to get on the phone with the FAA and help continue this this conversation and this discussion about recertification. Of course, for us as flyers, I mean, one of the things that people have talked about is when you make that purchase, when you buy a ticket to fly somewhere in LA, New York, what have you, you're looking at prices. You're looking at prices. You're looking at air carriers. You're not necessarily looking at the kind of flight or the kind of plane you're getting on. And that could all change here, where now people are a little more conscious of what it is that they're getting on before they board.
Right. Well, this has happened with the 737 back in the 1980s had a problem. There was a crash in Pittsburgh on approach. They called it a hard over rudder problem, where the rudder would just swing over, and there were a couple of crashes associated with that. Boeing was able to fix that and live it out, and the 737 has been the workhorse of aviation basically for the last almost 50 years. This particular thing, because it's a new model, and there was a secondary issue. The FAA flagged them for having a wiring issue also on board the plane, unrelated to the reasons that these things had crashed before, but a wiring issue where wires were too close together and not insulated in a way that made, or separate, I should say, in a way that made the FAA feel comfortable about making sure that these wires wouldn't short out and create another problem on the airplane. So
yeah, and that was discovered in December, and Boeing just admitted to that this week that they were nervous about a possible short circuit there. So that's kind of a new little wrench thrown into all of this certification.
Right.
Is this going to slow down the progress even more? We just don't know.
Ryan Burrow, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Ryan Burrow, ABC News and WGN Radio right now. Lauren Lapko, what's happening on the roads and in the skies?
Take a look at my girlfriend. She's the only one I got.
That's Supertramp. And we got tickets to go see Roger Hodgson from Supertramp, Silver Creek Event Center, Four Winds, New Buffalo, on Saturday, February 22nd. That's at 9 o'clock Eastern. Start for the concert, 8 o'clock Chicago time. Just have to make that adjustment when you go over to Michigan. That's what you got. That's all I'm telling you.
Not a whole hour.
Tickets coming your way early next hour. That's what I want to tell you. Not too far away from us right now. And that's going to be, it's one hell of a show. They've been out. With this show, it started about 6 months ago, I think, 9 months ago. They started going on tour with it, and the reviews are huge. So, very exciting. Also coming up at the 6 o'clock hour, Steve Stone will join us. He has just signed an extension with the Chicago White Sox.
Sox are signing everybody's deals.
that's true. When are we getting ours?
I don't know.
The 2020 outlook is pretty great, and Stoney will be with us. Coming your way in the 6 o'clock hour talking about that. And then what happened to our winter? We're going to explain that. There's a reason that we're having, it's March in January.
I love it.
But will it last? Will it last?
I hope so.
Now, we were talking about the 737 MAX, and we had some phone calls on it, and I want to get to a couple of these. Because the 737 MAX is scheduled now to start flying again in April for one major carrier, for American, and then in United in June. Boeing has got a new CEO. They're going to go out. They're going to try and convince us that everything's just fine with the 737 MAX. And as an aviation geek and a person who enjoys the flying and feels completely safe flying, even that makes me feel a little like,
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this. All right. Janine's got an interesting story. She's called WGN 312-91-7200 is our number. Go ahead, Janine.
Hey there, Roel. I was on my way home from work and I heard you pose that question. And I thought to myself, I have to call. My son is a pilot for one of the airlines.
Mm-hmm.
He flies for Southwest. And I live in the shadows of Midway Airport where those 737 MAXs land and take off. I would, without a shadow of a doubt, get on one of those planes. He has told me he enjoys flying them. He's never had a problem with them. I'm very, very confident in the training our pilots have.
Okay, so now one of the issues with the 737 MAX was the training of the pilot. Originally, Boeing had suggested that it's so similar to the 9, right? I get the 737s and the iPhones confused in terms of the generations of them. So I apologize for that. But it is similar to that generation right below the Max, except in terms of this one thing. The engines on the 737 Max are bigger, and therefore the weight distribution was different, and they added a computer, basically an algorithm to the computer that would take control away from the pilot, so that if the pilot didn't properly balance that weight basically while, you know, on a takeoff or approach, essentially, right? Because mm-hmm. that's the idea here. And sometimes that, apparently in two of these cases that were fatal, the pilots didn't react to the overcorrection by the computer, or they tried to countermand the computer move, thinking that the plane was out of control. And then the fight between the computer and the pilot were what actually crashed the aircrafts. Now, that's right now, as much as we kind of know, and it's the best, simplest way of putting it. The training in the United States, and remember, neither of these crashes did happen in the United States. The training in the United States was different. The Boeing, when they initially gave these planes out, they sold these planes out. The airlines wish they gave them away. They'd still be flying them. They said you could get trained, cross-trained on this on an iPad. But there were...
That's true. And he has told me he has done that.
But now they're going to change that. Now to qualify with the 737 Max, they're going to have to go sit in a simulator and encounter these things, so they know how to do it. Because it's like three steps or something like that. Don't quote me on that, but it's a number of steps that the pilot has to take, or the pilot and co-pilot have to take, to actually disable that system and take control back away from the computer. And you have to know how to do that. And then also have the flying sense to be able to right the aircraft in case there's a problem. So
correct. And our carriers, and I say this with confidence again, because this is something that we elaborated on in conversations with the family when we made inquiries when we see them, and they're constantly being sent down, like in his case, down to Dallas, which is where they do their simulator training,
right,
for continuing ed. It's a continuous in their life. So, you know, I, of course, can't speak for another airline, a foreign or domestic, but, you know, I'm just a mom of a pilot. But I can tell you, I ask those kind of questions, you know,
because of course.
I'm one of those
Who
crazy
wouldn't?
Moms.
Yes, that's not a crazy mom. Always, that's a mom. I totally,
you know,
get it.
But, you know, and I'm a non-rev passenger, which means mom of a pilot. Hey, you know, where do you want to go? I get on that plane. I would, with confidence, I wouldn't hesitate to get on one of those planes.
All right.
Once they give us the green light,
I'm flying with you. Can I hold your hand during that?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we got to sit in the front. All right, thank you very much.
Okay.
All right,
thank
appreciate
you.
Jeanine, thank you very much. All right, stuck to Robert. You're on WGN. Go ahead, Robert.
Hey, Ro. I'm a pilot that flies the Max. I've got a lot of hours in it before we had to park the airplanes, and I just want to make sure that. We get some of the correct information out there. Some of the people have talked about, you know, that these airplanes that crashed were foreign airplanes, and that is in fact the case. And it's quite a simple way to override this computer algorithm, as you talked about. It's been in the airplane since the first 737 was built. There's two switches down on the console. They turn off the automatic trim systems in the airplane. We've been trained on it since the very first 737 was flown. It's not new to how to cut out the computer.
Well, then why was this an issue for those international pilots?
Guys, if you go back and read the Lion Air report, and the other report from the other incident, you can find out that these pilots were very low-time pilots. The one in the right seat, I believe, had like 250 hours of total flying time. We would never put a pilot in an airplane with that kind of training in the United States. That's not we have way higher requirements, so that's one factor. The second factor is when you follow the guidance that's been put out by Boeing aircraft, you go through the steps, as you alluded to. There are some steps. One of the first steps in all emergencies is, just like if you were driving in your car down the road and something started to go wrong, what would you do? You'd slow down. We do the same thing in the airplane. We turn off the automatic systems, and one of those is the auto throttles. Well, on takeoff, as was the case in this one incident.
Right, Lion Air.
The aircraft was on takeoff, so where was the thrust levers? It was in the takeoff setting. So in order to override that, you have to turn off the auto throttles, pull the power back. That's first step in the procedure. So they didn't do that. So the next thing you know, they're going really, really fast. Now it's really, really hard to override the control system because the airplane's going really, really fast.
Now, I understand all that because I got about a minute left, and I appreciate your expertise on this. And so I want to ask you this question. Then, given the fact that this system is designed to keep the plane flying, because of the weight distribution issue, that's a simple way of putting it, but that's essentially what it is, right?
Right.
But in order to keep the plane flying, why would the control system, would you consider the control system to be flawed if it doesn't keep the plane in the air? That's, I guess, the question.
Well, the control system was on there to counteract the movement of the engines once they're powered up like that. But once I override the auto throttles and pull the power back, then the system's not going to be overriding anything because it's not going to be having that pitch motion. Because I've taken it away by pulling the power back.
Yeah.
And that's something we get a lot more training on here in the U.S. I mean, I hate to say it, but, Boeing sells airplanes worldwide. Guess what they're not going to do? They're not going to bite the hand that feeds them, and
right.
Part of that feed comes from around the world.
Robert,
a lot of different training takes place.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Ralph.
Thank you. Appreciate you being with us. All right, let's step down here. We got the news. We got Supertramp tickets. We got Steve Stone. We got the news. Important news at the top of the hour. Stay right here.
Chicago's very own Radio Chicago WGN.
All right. We are covering this story. We're watching this story that's developing out of Iraq, where 10 missiles have been launched, apparently from Tehran, toward a U.S. asset, the Al-Asad Air Base, outside of Baghdad. Bob Baer, one of the most decorated CIA agents of all time, CIA officers of all times, joins us right now on the hotline. Let's talk, Bob, first of all, let's just explain a little bit about what is at Al-Asad Base there. That's the major logistics center for American operations since the beginning of the Iraq War.
Yeah, it's one of them. There are multiple bases, but it's a logistics base, as you said. It's not a combat base. Fly helicopters out of there to fight the Islamic State. It is barely defensible in the sense that if Iranian-backed militias decide to take it, they probably could, especially with armor. And I think what we're seeing now is Tehran's answer. And the question was, were they going to do cyber attacks? Were they going to use proxies? Do plausible deniability? Now we know.
So, and with the missiles coming from Tehran, I mean, it's basically standing
they
up.
They said it's game on.
Yeah.
And this will very quickly, 99% will turn into a major regional war. I do not see how we cannot put, in order to fight this war on the ground, put hundreds of thousands of troops in the Gulf. There's no way to do it. There's no way to take out their strategic rockets from the air.
So
buried in caves.
So at the launch site, one of the questions I know that people are asking now is that the Israelis use this Iron Dome technology that we developed, and that's not being used here. Obviously, it wasn't used here because these missiles actually hit their target. Would that be an appropriate defense system to be using in theater?
Well, it would be, but they can beat it. They can swarm. They can put thousands of rockets in the air, and there's no way to defend against it. They've been working on this technology for years, and to beat the Israelis as well. The same way with our fleet, they can take a lot of small boats. It makes them very difficult to track.
Yeah, the Iranian military
so fast.
Let's just talk a little bit, Bob Baer, about the Iranian military capability here. We've been dealing with them through proxies. We've been dealing with them through militias, as you just mentioned. Through these are small arms, light armor, things like that. And the actual Iranian military, though, is robust. And we remember when we went into the Iraq War, they said, "Well, the Iraqis are, you know, one of the biggest armies in the world, and we were able to vanquish them." But the reality is that the Iranians have always been light years ahead here. They're far more technologically advanced than pretty much anybody in the Middle East on their using their own internal technologies, right?
Yeah, like nanotechnology is the one that's best known that they're brilliant at.
So, do we think that and another thing that should be noted about Iran, or is that Iran is fortified in its own way by the mountainous region in which it inhabits, right? It's like it's very hard, more so than Afghanistan, it's very hard to get a foothold in Iran. Iran is almost impossible to invade. Not that I think there would be an all-out invasion of it, but even as you point out, this mountain fortification, same problem in North Korea, it's really hard to identify where those sites are and then to actually get to those sites.
Well, yeah, they put things underground. They understand air power, and they understand what we're capable of doing. They watch what happened to Iraq. And a lot of their defenses are asymmetrical. But more than that, and this has always worried me, it's sort of a hobby horse of mine, is they did attack Opcake. They did put missiles and drones into those towers. They can, within hours, less than hours, take out the world's oil supply, 25% of traded oil. But, I mean, you know, you can say, well, we got oil here, but it's a fungible product.
Right. The price would go way up for us.
And we do get heavy oil from the Middle East.
Yeah.
And they can drive us in a couple hours, frankly, into a depression.
Is there...
No, they're clearly going to get hit hard. I mean, I don't believe this president's going to let this go.
Right. So the retaliation point, you're saying if we now respond to this by hitting Iran with missiles directly, which mm-hmm. you know that's a whole change here, because then you're hitting a sovereign country with missiles that you're not technically at war at, so that changes the dynamic here very, very quickly. You believe, Bob Baer, because based on, you know, you're studying this region for decades and understanding it, you believe that they would be likely then to go after Saudi oil supplies?
They'll go after that. They're going to kidnap Americans. They're going to assassinate military officers where they can find them. You'll see multiple fronts. And I think that as this escalates, the chances of hitting Israel are large. And they've got hundreds of thousands of missiles in Lebanon, and a capable fighting force in Hezbollah.
All right.
And don't forget, these people are disciplined. They follow the Grand Ayatollah, Khamenei, and they take orders. And when he issues a fatwa for a jihad, people follow. And that includes people in the United States. It's something we have a very difficult time understanding. Or nor do we understand when the Iranians have their back to the wall, as they do now, they believe they do, they're not going to, there's no diplomacy here.
Yeah.
Killing Soleimani, as bad as the guy was, I mean, in terms, he was effectively at war with us in Iraq. They that's an act of war for them, and for their existence, that's very clear that hitting Assad, the base, there's their response.
Yeah.
And I, you know, of course, nobody knew for sure. But now we do, don't we?
Bob Baer, thank you very much. Appreciate it, sir.
Thank you.
Always for your time. And if you've seen the movie Syriana, it's based on Bob's book. That's his life. George Clooney played him. He was a CIA operative in the Middle East for many, many, many decades. All right. Let's now check in with Lauren Lapko. What's happening in the traffic and the skies?
Get real in the morning with Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, and the entire WGN-TV morning news team, weekdays 4 to 10.
Yep. Right now, I got a pair of tickets. You want to go see Roger Hodgson from Supertramp, February 22nd? He's going to be at the Silver Creek Event Center, Four Winds, New Buffalo, on Saturday that night. Call it number 19, 312-981-7200. Yep, creepy DJ made his way back in to give away the tickets.
I wonder how many times he's played that song in his career.
Don't ask him. Okay. We just woke him up just to do that. We put him back to sleep. He put his headphones, his Jack Daniels, and his revolver back in his briefcase, and now we're going to put him back into his room. All right. There you go. Been promising this all day. That's going to be a fun show. I hear that's really amazing. If you love Supertramp, and really, who doesn't love Supertramp? All right, speaking of fun. And congratulations are in order for Steve Stone returning as the television voice of the Chicago White Sox for the 2020 season. And Steve, I gotta know here. We started talking about the White Sox 3 years ago together, and you said, "Listen, this is a rebuild, my friend. You gotta be patient. You gotta wait your time. You gotta make a decision. You know, sort of one season at a time about how far they have gone. But here, you said, wait three seasons, and you're gonna see real changes. And this seems to be the moment."
Well, I tried to tell everybody who cared to listen that the chronology of a rebuild was a complete teardown has to start it. Then you have to rebuild your farm system, and the Sox were able to do that by making three great trades, bringing in 10 players. And they got very good Red Sox players, very good Cub players, very good Washington players. And slowly but surely, with the infusion of these 10, the White Sox got better. Then they made a couple of good drafts. They made a sign from Cuba and Lewis Robert. We're going to see a whole lot of him in the coming years. Nick Madrigal, a very good draft pick. And certainly they made some good draft picks at the top of the draft as far as pitching was concerned. Well, when the farm system got ready and was productive and these young players were ready, that's what happened when last season ended heading into this offseason. I told everybody then that this would be the year they would spend money. And everybody, oh, they're not going to spend any money, and Jerry Reinsdorf is cheap, and the White Sox always do the same thing. I mean, it was what we've heard consistently from people who didn't understand how you build a team that can be a persistent contending team and eventually a World Series winner. And we're seeing it this year. You see the trade of Mazzara. That was a big one. Encarnacion coming over. Gio Gonzalez. Dallas Keuchel. You look at what's happened here. The signing of Robert. You look at Grandal coming over, which gives him a lot of balance. He's a switch hitter, particularly good from the left side, along with Moncada. He does give this lineup the balance that they really needed. But they spent a great deal of money. And with the addition of Cishek to help the bullpen, I think that although this team is not complete yet, and although they don't right now figure to have quite enough to catch the Twins, I think that they're certainly on the first or second leg of this pursuit of the Twins. I think the Indians are going the other way. The Indians are going to trade Lindor. He will not finish the season with the Indians. It's a good chance they trade Clevinger. When that happens, the Indians will be falling down, and it'll leave what a lot of people around the White Sox and the Central Division have seen for a long time, and that is the White Sox in Minnesota battling it out year after year to rule the division. And I think we're going to see that for the foreseeable future. And so I'm really excited what Rick Hahn, Kenny Williams, and what Jerry Reinsdorf has done with this ball club. The acquisition of these guys makes this team legitimate. And this is the first time they've been legitimate in quite some time.
What else do you think they need, Steve?
Well, I'd like to see perhaps one more bullpen arm. But, you know, a lot of people say, well, it was Steve Cishek. Yes, but when you look at a guy who's never had a 3-point ERA, whose lifetime ERA is in the just above the mid-2s, you'd have to say it's a pretty good addition. Plus, 150 appearances the last 2 years, he was very durable. Now, the one area that is problematic is that his ERA against the left-handers isn't quite as good, not near as good as it is against the right-handers. And this year, with the three-hitter rule coming in, it's going to be interesting to see how Ricky Renteria uses him. That being said, he's a great addition to the bullpen, and I think it's an upgrade for the Sox. I'd like to see perhaps one more bullpen arm. I think the Sox are trying to do that. Now, they missed out on a couple of guys they liked. They liked Harris. They liked Stamen. They liked a couple of guys that they couldn't quite nail down. And Hudson was another guy they liked. They couldn't get him either. But they kept on trying, and I don't anticipate they're going to stop trying now. They're going to do everything they can. Maybe another swing man to help platoon in the outfield. That could be something that you'll see. And I don't know what their feeling is on Cameron Maben, but that's one of the guys that's out there that can hit a little bit and certainly hit left-handers. But you might want a guy out there that can platoon with Mazzara. That guy might be Leury Garcia. He is a jack-of-all-trades. He's a guy that can fill in at second. He can play some short when Tim is not playing for whatever reason. He can play some right field also. We saw that. So he's really a durable guy, a guy that can fit just about anywhere. The Sox will be trying to improve their bench. And right now, I think they're just a tick behind Minnesota. But Minnesota hasn't gone out there to get that number one starting pitcher yet. And if Kopech comes back 100%, Giolito was a number one starting pitcher. You've got Cease, who's going to get better. You add Keuchel and you add Gonzalez to that rotation. Who knows where Lopez fills in. But you have to look at this team as being a whole lot stronger. And there's a lot of people that say, okay, it's a 500 team max. I don't see it that way. I think this team can get in the high 80s, perhaps as many as 90 wins. And I know that Rick and Kenny are not done yet. I know they're still looking to make this team better because I think they believe that the division is gettable this year. Wow. It's a five-year rebuild. This is the fourth year. But I think we saw some cracks in the armor of the Indians. I think they'll continue to slide down the hill. And I can't believe that Minnesota is going to have five guys hit 30 home runs. And I also believe that the ball is going to be scaled back somewhat. We saw the liveliest baseball in the history of the game. You didn't see that same tightly wound, really, really low seam baseball in the playoffs. You didn't see the ball travel quite as far in the playoffs. I think we're going to see a scaled down baseball. That's going to play away from the strength of the Twins, who proved conclusively when they couldn't get by the Yankees that you can't just win it on hitting. You have to have some pitching. I think the Twins' pitching is a little sketchy, and we'll have to see how that plays out. But I think the Sox truly believe in that front office, down in that dugout, and in Ricky Renteria's office. They believe that this division is gettable this year.
Now, one question mark has been second base. You could pretty much write the lineup otherwise. What are your thoughts on what we will see opening day? Because, you know, we still have Madrigal. Will they maybe sign him as well?
I don't think that Madrigal breaks with the team. I think that unlike Robert, who just dominated at every level he was at, Nick probably needs a little more. I think Nick is the long-term answer at second. What I like about him, he's a contact hitter. He's a very good fielder. He's a guy that's going to add a new dimension to the lineup because he's going to put the ball in play, and you need those guys. You need those kind of table setters, the guys that don't strike out. Look, make no mistake, Lauren, that this team is going to strike out a lot. There's going to be a lot of guys that walk back to the dugout. But it's going to hit a lot of home runs also, and that's an area that the Sox really had to address. They didn't hit the ball out of the park in a home run hitter's ballpark near as much as they had to take advantage of a guaranteed rate field. I think that everybody associated with the club knew that. They knew that that was one of the problems. That's why Grandal is here. That's why Encarnacion is here. That's why Robert has signed. So I believe that they've addressed that deficiency in the long ball. Mazzara is only 24 years old. Yes, he hits 20 home runs a year, but he's still young. His arrow is still going up. And I think with Frankie Medichino, I think that that Mazzara might find a little something that he might not have had in Texas. He started to drop his hands somewhat a little later in the year, and I think it made him a little bit more consistent hitter. I think still we haven't seen what the kind of player he can be, and I think we're going to see a better Nomar Mazzara, and hopefully that's the case. Again, you know, everybody knows he's been around for a while. You have a tendency to believe he's 28, 29 years old. He's only 24. There's still room for growth.
Remember a year ago, or a little under a year ago now, Sox fans and baseball fans were upset about Machado, you know, not coming to the White Sox. That seems like a blessing now, right? I mean, what they've been able to spend, what they've been able to do, and now a year later, it was a very fun year at the ballpark. I mean, I got to say, the White Sox put on a pretty good show in the 2019 season, but 2020, this is for, as we like to say in racing, this is for all the roses right here. I share your optimism about this, that this is a team that really does think that it has playoff potential, and you know, 85, 87, 90 wins, certainly not out of the question. 85, certainly not out of the question. So we'll see.
No, and I talk to all those people, and I'm on Twitter at Steve Stone, and I talk with the fans all the time, and everybody was so impatient. It was, you have to have Harper, you have to have Machado. You have to get one of the two. You have to have Harper, you have to have Machado. Well, bear in mind something. These are $30-plus million-a-year players. They're $300 million contract players. you don't have to look too far to look perhaps at the other side of town, the north side, and see what happens when you handicap yourself with huge contracts that become, in the later stages, sometimes the middle stages, they become untenable contracts. And so, look, Philadelphia didn't win, and San Diego didn't win. I'm not going to denigrate Machado and Harper because they're two very good players. But the Sox were not one player away from winning last year. Neither of those guys helps the Sox win last year. And if you take away some of the money they had to spend this year on those guys, I think this is a weaker team, not a stronger team, for what they were able to do. The amount of players they were able to go out and get, I still believe they have some money to spend. I still believe they'll be looking for others. They wouldn't have been able to accomplish near what they accomplished this winter if they had either one of those guys, either Harper or Machado. Last year was not the year to make that huge splash into the market. I think Rick and Kenny knew that. I know that Jerry knew that for sure. Yeah. And yet they suffered the slings and arrows of the outrageous fandom saying, you know, oh, you're cheaper, this, you're that. Well, let's wait and see how this plays out. We still have one more year in the rebuild, but right now this is a very exciting team.
All right, Steve Stone, thank you very much. Congratulations on your return as well. Thank you, sir.
Okay, Ro, take care.
All right, there he goes. Great Steve Stone. Cy Young winner. Let's check in now with Kim Gordon. She's got the news, and we're going to find out what happened to our winter. Why is it like March in January? Rocon Show right here, 720 WGN. All right, we're continuing in the newsroom to watch the events unfolding in the Middle East. Apparently, there have been now, as you just were listening in the news, two U.S. military installations that were targeted by Iranian missiles this afternoon, Chicago time, the middle of the night, Iraq time. One, the Al-Assad base, which is about 100 miles north and west of Baghdad, or north and east west of Baghdad, I should say. And then a base in Erbil, which is a couple hundred miles north of Baghdad. Both of them have been struck by what is now being, we're now being told by the Pentagon, about a dozen missiles fired in total. And CNN is now reporting that there are casualties. They've been told by military sources that there are casualties somewhere at one of those two bases. They're not being specific about that yet. And the question then becomes, what is the U.S. response now to this? Will there be a response? And we talked earlier to Bob Baer, who was, you know, one of the, for those who are familiar with his work, you know, Bob Baer wrote a book after he left the CIA after many years in the Middle East. He was a station chief and one of the top espionage guys in the history of the American intelligence phalanx. The book was made into a movie, Syriana, which starred George Clooney as Bob Baer. And Bob told us that the one thing that we have to think about, and you really have not heard this anywhere else, is that the Iranians are capable of taking out the Saudi oil production system, which obviously the kingdom is a very, very big ally of the United States, even more so now in the Trump administration than it probably has been in, actually, even including the Bush administration, the last number of administrations. And I think all will be done to try to protect that, because even though we can say, well, we're self-sustainable as a, as you know, in terms of energy here in North America now, that it is a world market for oil. And if you take out a fifth of the world's or a quarter of the world's oil supply in a couple of hours, it would create mass inflation in the oil markets. And that would be disastrous for the world economy. So that, I think, is the one piece here that he is speculating that is a diplomatic chip that sits out there. Now, you know, in response to that, would there be a massive attack on Iranian interests in Iranian? They're a major oil producer as well. What would happen with them as well? So there's a lot here that we have to watch in the coming hours and days, and keep it here. We'll bring you the news through the newsrooms and then analysis throughout the shows as well. Now, having said that, I do have a question about what has happened here in Chicago to our weather. How is it possible that it is March in January? Only one man can answer that question. Well, two men can answer that question, but one man's available to answer it with us right now. Meteorologist Rick DeMaio, you know him, you love him from television, but he's also an aviation meteorologist and an instructor and professor. Aren't you an assistant professor somewhere now too?
No, never got to the assistant professor, just an instructor. I guess you can kind of say lecturer. They got these, titles, but instructor at Lewis and also at Loyola University, the Institute of Environmental Sustainability. Yeah.
Excellent. All right, let's talk about this. Why is it that we have now, we're approaching the middle of January?
Right.
and we have not had a massive cold outbreak. We've had very limited snow.
Okay, well, let me first stop you there. We had our massive cold outbreak
in October.
In the second half of October and the first half of November. And if you remember, Ro, that one day after the snow on the 11th of November, I think it was the 12th of November, we had a high of 17. And I think I kept telling my students, this is cold even for January. So it's kind of odd. It's not so much that we haven't had the cold weather. It just hasn't been here when you normally expect it. And again, this seems to be the way our patterns have been developing globally now over the last 3 or 4 years, is that where you have the warm air and where you have the cold air doesn't really reside over the areas at a certain period of time when you would normally expect them to be there. And it's almost like you can now count on a more higher degree of variability as opposed to a higher degree of normalcy. And just take the first 6 days of the month. We're 10.7 degrees above normal. We were 6.3 above normal for the month of December after we were 6 below normal for the month of November. And I guarantee you, if you ask most people on the street whether or not the year 2019 was above or below normal, people will say it was warmer than normal, but in fact it was literally 0.3 of a degree below normal. Most people will remember how things are in the past based on what's happening in the current.
Yeah. Thank you for that. But stay right there, because I want to ask you, though.
Yeah,
because I need to know what the future is, and only only meteorologists are bold enough to try to predict it. So hold on, because I have a thought about where this winter is actually heading here based on my lifelong experience.
And I kind of set the perspective, and we'll delve into the future right after.
You want to go to a break.
Yep.
Right after this. Stand by. Rick DeMaio. Let's check in with Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the roads and in the skies? Chicago Blackhawks hockey coming your way at the top of the hour as they take on the Calgarys at the United Center. We're going to be at that game. If you see us in the concourse, please say hello.
And Lauren's on edge tonight for some reason. Don't look her in the eyes.
Yeah.
And maybe trip row, because we could all use a good laugh today.
See what has happened here?
Yeah.
She has turned on me. She has absolutely turned on me. What we do is we walk through the concourse in slow motion. So you'll notice us because it's like in one of those commercials where the people are just in a slow fee or whatever. Have you seen that? That Apple's not trying to tell you what they're
like the slow-mo selfie.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So we just walk through like that and you'll just notice us and please say hello. And please do not make eye contact with Lauren. All right, Rick DeMaio is joining us. He's our meteorologist of great fame here. He's the chief meteorologist of the Rokan Show, not including the people who work it. You'd be about sixth in line by the time we're done with the Channel 9 people. But that's still, hey, at least you're on the roster. All right, let's talk about the fact that we've had the winter, as you said earlier. There have been these very wacky patterns of how the jet stream has been moving and how the very cold air over the North Pole gets dumped down. We had these polar vortexes on and off since 2013, 2014. We had some mild winters before that, though. And then was it last year or the season before? We had sort of a half of winter like this where we got into January, and by January 15th, we're like, hey, we're going to make it through. And then, boom, as soon as I said that, we got hit hard. As you you look ahead here, are you seeing that this pattern of mild winter continues, or are we about to get hit hard?
We're about to get hit hard, but only because we've been so warm, normal winter is going to feel really, really cold. So to put it into perspective, even if we go to, say, high temperatures in the upper 20s or low 30s, and it looks like we're going to get into that probably by about the 15th or 16th of the month, it's going to all of a sudden go, oh, my God, I can't believe how cold it is. And I keep reminding people, when you wake up in the morning, it's supposed to feel like 15 or 16 degrees, which is what it will do tomorrow.
Lovely.
But the fact that we've been, you know, in the mid to upper 20s, part of the reason we've been able to stay so warm is the lack of snow cover. So one of the things, Ro, that we've seen with an overall warming of the globe is some of the more, if you want to call it, normal attributes of winter, I don't think they're going to ever happen again, meaning that you're not going to have these long durations of really, really deep snow that you used to get in the Midwest. That I remember when I was at the University of Wisconsin in 83, 84, and 85, once it snowed in December, it was there to the end of February. Those days are gone. The period that you would get a January thaw, that would always happen somewhere, you know, the middle of January, and you would melt the snow. But now we melt snow not so much by sunshine, but also rain. I mean, when was the last time we had periods of heavy rain in Chicago during the winter months that would happen like maybe once every 5 years? It's literally every year now. So bottom line, let me put this into perspective.
Yeah.
The earth is a lot warmer than it was 100 years ago, okay? It's not a natural warming. This is accelerated by humans. The science is settled on that. The question is, what do we do about it? And how do we react to it? And I always talk about this to my kids at Loyola University. I want you to think of this from an economic standpoint. If I tell you that something is going to change in 6 months and I tell you exactly how it's going to change, you can respond to that. But what we're seeing now is these high degrees of variability, and it's much, much more difficult to adapt to increased variability as opposed to I know exactly what's going to happen. So one of the things that we get concerned about is, what does that mean for the farmers? What does that mean for the ski resort? What does that mean for the people making a buck on snowmobiling? What does that mean for the people making a buck on snow removal? All of those things that are attributed to a normal winter or a normal summer are now off the table. And now we have to think differently about the climate and about how it's affecting us. But that's a hard question to ask someone like you and I. It's a more difficult question to ask for someone who's 20 or 25 when you tell them, when your kids are retiring in the year 2100, the world could easily be 2.5 or 3 degrees warmer. How are you going to respond to that? And then you put the chips on the table and go, that's a big question. How do I go about answering it? It's hard. It really is.
This is exactly what Joaquin Phoenix said at the Golden Globes. All right.
I just want to know.
I get it. And I don't disagree with you. And you talk to farmers in the Midwest. You talk to people who deal with this day in and day out and actually have real businesses in this and not just caught in the political fighting and on Twitter and all the rest of that. They don't have skin in the game. The people who have skin in the game actually will tell you that there is climate change. And the question is, you know, how are you going to eventually deal with it? But that's really... I paid for my global warming. I want it here in Chicago for me personally. And I'm just looking ahead. As I look ahead at the long-term forecast here for when long-term is like, you know, 7 days or whatever, seems like we're going to have a little bit of weather over the weekend. We're going to have rain turning to snow Saturday on Saturday into Sunday morning potentially. And then it gets warm again next week into the 40s. I mean, that's warm for January. Right.
Here's the thing. It used to be that in the month of January, you did not have to consider what the lake water temperature was on whether or not you were going to get rain or snow. The lake water temperature in the middle of the lake is 38. The Great Lakes on a complete coverage of the Great Lakes, 1.3% ice. That's not good. And people go, yeah, but it's okay if it's not ice covered. No. Ice along the lakefront actually protects the beaches when you have big storms. So it's really weird. Trust me, when it was 60 degrees the day after Christmas, I was happy about it. And people were going, this is nice, but it's also really weird. And it's weird because you don't want to talk about something that's really, really good for people in a bad way. you want to talk about it in a way that they go, I think I kind of know where you're coming from, but can I enjoy it for now and worry about it later?
Yes. That's how I live my life. Before we let that point go, I think it's important that the Great Lakes and the snowpack up in Wisconsin and Minnesota and Canada is less than it had been. So the cold air isn't locking into us. That's one of the reasons that we're enjoying the mildness here. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I think that's a good point from a standpoint of how it actually keeps the Great Lakes colder. But with the Great Lakes being warmer right now, you actually have a little bit of a warm pool over the Great Lakes. What we're concerned about is whether or not the deep snowpack up north and any heavy rain that comes back in the spring will give us flooding conditions next spring, because this past spring was the wettest ever, and you know what it did to the farmers.
So that would be bad for the Mississippi.
Yeah, what they don't want is another wet spring coming up, and it seems to be that's where we're going.
Okay, so that would be bad. That would be bad for the Mississippi River and tributaries and stuff like that. One would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. One way or another. But I'll leave you with this point.
Yep.
When you talk to someone who works for a ski resort, they hate this kind of pattern because they don't know how to plan for it. But when you talk to someone who works for United Airlines, they go, I love this pattern because I don't have to worry about de-icing airplanes and plowing runways. So there's good things, there's bad things to it in the short term. In the long term, you get a little bit of nervous about it.
Okay, I'll be nervous for till my first cocktail tonight. Thank you very much. Rick DeMaio from Lewis University, which is one of the great aviation schools in the world on the planet, and then also from Loyola University, which is one of the great universities in the world too. So there you go.
Hey, Ro, real quickly, at Lewis, we now have an MD-80 that was donated to us from American Airlines, a new airplane on our runway there.
Can I go fly it?
Sure, you can fly it as long as you know how to work it. But
sure.
Beautiful new airplane that adds to our 737 that we all have. So
thank you. Well, I can fly the 737. I can fly it on flight simulator. I must be able to fly it in real life. Thank you. Goodbye. All right, there he goes.
Take care,
Rick DeMaio. He's our sixth in line meteorologist here, but that's okay. He enjoys the title.
We got a lot of them.
we call him up. He's like one of those guys you call up for a couple of weeks when you got an injury. And then I don't know, maybe he stays with the team. You never know how that goes.
Hey, sometimes people like them better than the starters.
Get Wally pipped.
Chicago Blackhawks hockey is coming your way at the top of the hour. They're taking on the Calgary Flames tonight at the United Center. It's going to be a lot of fun. They've won four out of their last five. They are on a roll. We'll be there. If you're on your way there and you run into us, say hello to us in the concourse, because we just stand out there and wait for people to recognize us. Thank you. Have a great night. We'll see you back here tomorrow at 3.
Chicago's very own.